Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Hello, everyone. Shannon Guss here getting you ready for our Australian Survivor Week 2 coverage. A lot of stuff coming at you. I had such a fun recap with Sarah Talik. We looked back at the whole week, analyzed it all. There was obviously a lot going on in the second week, so I hope you check that out. And if you want to skip straight to the exit interview and then hopefully double back, I chatted with Mitch at 2 hours and 15 minutes. Didn't get to chat to Benny this week. Not really sure what's happening with the exits. I just kind of take them when I get it. So hope that you enjoy that, and I will see you on the other side. Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor Brains versus Brawn. I'm your host, Shannon Gast, here to talk through week two, that is episodes 4 through 6, and it was a big week. I feel like the general response, at least the Twitter response, kind of went, you know, kind of was down on it, and then it came back up, and it's been a roller coaster, as it always is, but it was exciting times, and I really enjoyed these last few episodes, so I'm going to welcome in someone I've wanted on the podcast for a very long time to recap with me. She was a total standout on Australian Survivor 2017, and is a complete fan favorite. Please welcome the wonderful Sarah Talik. Sarah, thank you for being here.
Oh, Shannon, that's such a beautiful intro. Total standout in my season as well is a is a huge statement.
That
and
is true.
One I don't feel worthy of in the light with the likes of, you know, the Lukes and the Henrys.
No, I mean,
look, the past, and the AKs.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite newbie casts ever in any iteration, but you are absolutely a standout from that. And one of the reasons that season is still one of my favorite seasons of all time.
Oh, thanks, Shannon. I appreciate that.
But this season, I think, is following maybe a similar trajectory in just being kind of chaotic early as your season
did.
What are you thinking, just like your immediate thoughts on what the season is?
Well, do you know, it's funny you say that it reminds you of season two, because I similarly felt the same way. And I was worried that it was a little bit narcissistic of me, because I'm in this group chat with some of the other survivors, and we're doing a bit of a sweep for this season. And I won't say who, because I don't want to call them a narcissist, but like people are sort of saying like, oh, it reminds them, it's like our season, it's All Stars, it was just like our season. And I was thinking, well, it's got no celebrities, it's back to normal people. Well, like, I think it's more like our season, which is like crazy and chaotic and normal people, which I love. I love seeing normal people play Survivor.
I mean, for me, they're normal for you, Sarah, maybe because of your like extreme success in life. I've been saying that they're quite an aspirational cast. Maybe not celebrities, but definitely like people of enormous stature. And I think compared to your season, it is to me similar in the chaos, similar in the big moves early, similar in the fact that like they never do the easy thing, do they? They're just going to do like the most difficult thing every time. But in terms of like, I mean, I love your cast, as I've said. I feel like this season for me is at this point slightly better than its cast, which is an interesting thing. I feel like there are a lot of people who maybe don't know the game, and it's being carried by some like big moments, some standout characters. The editing has been a bit wonky. But I feel like your cast carried that season, and now this season is good, maybe in spite of some questionable casting for me, or not even questionable casting, but I'm just looking to see more because there's some people we've barely seen from at all.
Me too. And that's like, it's certainly, I think it's a shared frustration a lot of fans who really want to get into the nitty gritty of the game have with the show, because you know, like, especially in the Brains tribe, which I feel like it's not like there's really solid alliances happening there. So for me, like, that indicates a really complex tribe dynamic. And yet we really only see George. And I love George. I think he's playing an amazing game. But I do think the producers of this show, they love a character. They love they love throwing a story, like a simplified story. So when you have these huge characters like George, it takes all the air out of the room. And sadly, you don't see the nuance. Like, what is Joey actually doing to be on the top of his alliance? Like, yeah, we see him at the top of his alliance, but I would love to see how he's managing the relationships within his alliance that give him that power, rather than having to just accept it as like, oh yeah, that's Joey's alliance, and I don't know how he did that, but he did that, you know?
Yeah.
I'd love to see it.
Well, that's Joey and Co. Like, you don't get from anyone else. I call them Coey as of now. But, like, you don't get the Laura, Georgia just got a confessional in the last confessional. Like, it's quite sparse. And, you know, in terms of the editing, it's been out there. Episode 5 in particular has not gone unnoticed by fans. Like, six people out of 20 got a confessional. I don't know if that's historic, but it should be, because I hope it hasn't been worse than that. One confessional for a woman in the whole episode, which was Rachel. Simon, George, and Doey dominated the confessionals. There were two swing votes in Haley and Rachel. Again, we got that one confessional from Rachel and nothing from Haley. And 4 of 11 Brains who went to tribal council got confessional. So I don't condone this, obviously. That's not what I want to see. It was a lot more even coming in out of the last episode of the week. But I will say that this is what Australian Survivor is. I feel like I come on every week and say, guys, me and you as the listeners, all of us have to accept that this is a different beast. And I know why the show does it. It does it because I've seen 3 different articles about George in the last 2 days on, like, Punky and Pedestrian TV. He is headline making, so they drive it home. If they give a kind of even edit, is that going to make headlines? No, they need like a standout thing. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to like really grasp this, like, maybe a casual audience against like a difficult TV landscape, make it really dramatic and get headlines for the next day and get people really talking about it. And that's what you do when you go bigger rather than maybe going fair or even.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I also think they have to consider the audience. And whilst, you know, the people that love the show and we've watched it for years and years and we know how to break the show down, Survivor, I think, especially Survivor Australia, it's new again to Australia. Like, a lot of the people watching now did watch Survivor back in the day years ago, but they're tuning back in. So it needs to be simplified. They don't want to get home at the end of the day and have to break down tribe dynamics in a really complex way. They just want a character to hate. They want a character to love. They want an alliance to root for. They want just a really simple story, and it kills the rest of us. But it's like you said, I do understand why they do it. It's great for media, and it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It is what Australian Survivor is now. We can talk about it. We can engage with it. We can criticize it in ways. But I do think, even with like Kara being saved in this last episode, like, I will criticize it on this podcast in the way that it was done. I don't agree with it. But at the end of the day, non-eliminations are part of the format. We have to expect it at this time. She goes to Braun, extremely similar to what happened to your season where Tara and Annalise come onto your tribe. So at this point, it has to be like fairly expected by both players and audience members, I think. It can be done in a better way, something we'll talk through. But you really do at this point just have to be like, Australian Survivor is its own thing. There are reasons they're doing it, that kind of simplifying it across the board, as you said, like, they're talking about Shannon flipping on Benny, something we'll talk about. Danny is the one who technically, you know, he was the flip that made them ties, but they don't mention that. They kind of don't want you to think about it too much, even though they do show Shannon's voting confessional for Simon, but they don't want you to think about it too much. They kind of want to stand back, watch this grand masterpiece, this big, big thing, and maybe don't like think about the intricacies. I say, as we head into what will be a 2-hour podcast, talking about the intricacies. So maybe not the medium that they're looking
for. We still find a way to do it. And that's probably why they're like, oh, the super fans will be fine. They still find a way to make 2-3 hour podcasts.
Yeah, they'll still be there watching at the end of the day. And they do know that. And they do think that. And it's not for us, I don't think. But we'll still find like our ways to enjoy it, which I definitely am, and ways to analyze it. So we're definitely going to get into it. Sarah, I meant to ask you as well before we do, like, what have you been up to? I feel like you're like me. You're always stuck between Sydney and Melbourne. Am I correct about this? Like, how have you been since I saw you last, I guess, pre-pandemic, like right before the pandemic?
Yeah, so just pretty much that. Like I've been working right up until the pandemic, and thankful. Like I've been also throughout just the last like say 7 years have been completing my university degree. So the pandemic wasn't too badly timed for me because I had decided to finish off the last year and a half of my degree full time, which is in the degree is in marketing and management. So just been studying, working, traveled a lot since like my season on like Survivor in 2017. So yes, a lot of the same really, nothing super, super interesting.
Okay. Well, we're glad to have you on this podcast. We've done Talking Tribal together a couple of times, but have never got to do RHAP. So I'm definitely keen to get into it. And I think we have to go through like pretty much, yeah, every vote this week has been questionable, at least I think worthy of debate. As I said, they never do the easy thing. And I feel like, let me know if I'm on the money with this, because I've compared it, as we said, to early 2017, even to like something like Summertale, the tribe you were against. I feel like these big tribes, that's always been my theory, like that's what causes these like big fractures and chaos. And being on a tribe with 12 people, like, was that a factor for you? Was that kind of a reason that you think it can get so chaotic because there's just like so many personalities to manage?
I think yes. I also think they really do cast for it to go that way. I think they, and also in the lead up to the game, I really think they encourage players to, you know, they stroke the egos of a lot of the players going in, and they say, you know, we've got everything riding on you. We're really looking forward to what you do. Don't disappoint us. Don't let us down. Like, there's a lot of grooming before the show. So
that's interesting.
I think the chaos comes a lot from the type of people they cast and what intentions those people have. And I also think, you know, in week one, and I can totally empathize with it, there's a lot of anticipation you have as a player to get a grasp on your direction, your story, or like the type of player you want to be, your position in the tribe. And these people, I think with the pandemic, I had much longer than most to think about Survivor before playing. So I just think, yeah, in week one, and you see the sort of consequences of week one's chaos, and it continues on into this week, but you see, I think it just comes from people raring to go and time to sit around at camp and think, oh, I'm not doing enough. I don't feel like there's enough attention on me.
I'm getting zero confessionals right now, which is a legitimate risk and threat that they might have. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's really easy to lose sight of the fact that it is a long game, and you want to do more. You want to feel in control. It's a way to feel good about your position in the tribe. So, you see some people who have gone too far, like the Simon, who I imagine has big ideas about what he wanted to do with the game. But you see now in week two, he's sort of reeling it back and adapting, which I love to see as well. So I just think it's in answer to your question, I think they cast for it, and I think they groom you before you play. And so the first 2 weeks is really sort of getting the jitters out and settling into the game. And that's why we see chaos from the beginning.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective, because I would say this week, no one went really with the easy vote. Obviously, in the last episode,
no.
They did split the vote. That was quite easy. But then Kara, like, self-sacrifices for George, so she didn't do the easy thing.
Everything was wild and risky.
I refer to her on Twitter as the Macedonian Jesus. I mean, does this make way too much sense? Like, he's been praying to the Macedonian Jesus the entire time, and she did save him, and then she did sacrifice herself in the game, and she died in the game. She came back to life. Like, I am Jewish, so maybe I'm not the right person to speak about it, but, like, it makes too much sense.
It's totally analogous.
Yeah, his prayers were answered from Kara, but like, you're right, they didn't do any of the easy stuff, and I do wonder how much is like playing hard, because if we like take it to the Benny vote, first vote of the week, this has been highly debated online, which I enjoy. I debated it with Luke on Talking Tribal. Like, he was into them voting out Benny. I think this is a baffling move. Like, I think this is the producer saying, don't let us down, and they just don't want to make the easy move of voting out, like, a big player in Simon, who would be down the line from Gavin. That's what it is to me. I see merit on both sides, but I still think it was, like, way too big a move too early. Like, where did you sit with this on them voting out Benny over Simon?
I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have rested on my laurels at this stage in the game, especially when there is such an obvious, you know, us, like them versus Simon sort of thing. Like, Simon is going to come for them at some stage. So just sort it out. Get rid of him now. It's the clear and obvious choice. But and the fact that they went with Benny makes me think, well, maybe Benny might have been annoying to be around in camp. Maybe that, again, it's the whole thing of maybe there's stuff we're not seeing, nuance we're not seeing, because it doesn't make sense as to why they would get rid of Benny. But what I extra didn't like about it was how they sort of made him fight to stay.
Yeah.
At Tribal. Like, I, because even if they did keep him, which I think Shannon voted to keep him in the end, after making him sort of go, oh, well, why should we keep you? Why would you do that and then keep him? Because you just made him feel so insecure in his alliance. So it was, to me, it was firstly not the right decision to get him off. But then the whole mess in the lead up, just for me, it didn't, I couldn't understand why those decisions were being made. And I really hope it's because I'm not seeing the full picture.
I mean, I would agree with you, because she called him a dead weight and then voted to keep him in the game. She voted for Simon. So it's that approach. And we'll talk about it, I guess, from Dany's perspective, because he is the one who individually flips to take it to a tie. And then the rest of Braun, other than Gerald and Flick, flip. Shannon flips on the revote. But there was a kind of a Braun majority thing about it for me. Then I want to talk about it from the Braun majority, because I do think, well, you know, the edit credit Shannon and Gerald, credit slash blame Shannon for this, even though she did vote out Simon in the first vote. There has to be, like, something to wear there, surely, for the fact that, A, someone in the game like Gerald was saying it, and B, just for the approach. Like, if she locks down her alliance, is Dany flipping? I'm not so sure. But she's coming in and whispering and putting Benny on trial. Like, I think that factors in to the fact that Dany flips and then everyone else flips. Like, I see this more as, like, a majority decision, even though one person made the initial decision to flip and then, like, everyone else hopped on board.
Right. Wait, so let me just break that. So you think Dany was the leader of that flip?
So Dany did flip. Like, to take it to a tie, it was in 6-4. He's the one person to flip to take it to a 5-5. And then the rest of Braun, other than Gerald and Flick, flip. So it does seem like an individual move that Dany does it. We know that Dany has been a bit of a swing vote. He's been a bit in the middle. I do think for Dany, like, you look so dicey right now. Like, he is flip-flopping everywhere. Yeah. I don't like the move for him anyway. But I do think there's, like, a bit of a Braun majority to it, in the fact that they all eventually hop on his vote and on the revote, and also the fact that just, like, when you're whispering heading into Tribal and when it's this vocal and when you're calling someone a dead weight, like, maybe he's just misreading signals that it's going to be a Benny vote, but also maybe he just thinks it's okay. Like, I think it's a different kind of turn of events where Shannon, who's very much at the head of that alliance, is like, guys, we are not entertaining this. Simon is a liability. He is against us. He is ruthless. He's relentless. Like, he's our enemy. Like, we're doing this. But because she kind of gives it some voice, no matter where her first vote is going, I do feel that like empowers Dany and then the rest of the Braun to kind of hop on with it and vote out Benny.
Yes. Yeah, completely. Yeah, it's just messy. See, I had totally missed, I don't know why I missed this, but I totally missed that it was Dany that sort of led that.
Yeah, I mean, you need to vote match it, and then they had the full votes just as an extra scene if anyone wants to check that out. It didn't give a ton of extra information, but it's on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, again, and that's another thing. I at this stage, it's why are you flipping from two different alliances? Is it because he thinks he can get away with it? Can he get away with it? Is that the type of sort of widespread relationships he's got in that tribe? I do see that he seems to get along with absolutely everyone in that tribe. So maybe he's in the position where he really feels it's inconsequential what he does, because people are still going to want to work with him, come a merger or shakeup, which is pretty confident. And I did notice that he was speaking about himself in third person. So
caught that one.
So
as someone who's played with a lot of people who I feel speak about themselves in third person, which seems like a bit of a prerequisite to some of the male characters on Australian Survivor.
Oh, totally.
I mean, he has a social game, I think, to rebound from a lot in terms of the fact that I would not want to play with Dany because he seems to just, like, go wherever the wind blows. And that yes. feels really dicey as an ally. But I do think, yeah. like, to give voice to the pros of this move, because as I said, the internet seems divided. Luke was on the other side of this. I think Benny did a lot wrong. He obviously,
yes.
some of it I think had merit and some of it didn't. Like, him being bad at the challenge I think is completely irrelevant. If I was Benny, I'd be like, wait, so anyone who does bad in the challenge will just get cut. That is a really scary yeah. place to be for any of you guys. And absolutely. Then also there seemed to be this, like, weird moralistic, like, Simon deserves to be here more, he wants it more. Like, that might be true, but is also, like, completely irrelevant to this. If anything, I'd want someone more passive than, like, active Simon against me, who's, like, pleading for his life and, like, absolutely making moves. Like, that's dangerous. So not only is that irrelevant, but I feel, like, actively negative to their decision. But then there are parts of it that, like, Benny's a liability. He tells Dany that the vote is going to be on Simon. That's not great from an ally who's, like, leaking information. And I do think that for someone like Dany, or, you know, just in general, you might want to be a bit unified coming into a potential swap. Like, I get that kind of idea of, like, unity, we're not so divided. But
yeah.
to me, I still would be going against Simon. I still think he's way too much of a threat. We see how he rallies in the next couple of episodes. And it doesn't really feel like he has been brought in. Like, Gerald describes that it was quite like a somber mood. Like, it feels really negative. He then goes and finds these idols. Like, he feels like he's on the back foot. He feels like he's fighting. You've put him in that position, but you've kept him around to feel that way. So I just think, like, way too dangerous here to leave Simon in the game, even if I do see some, like, small merit to the fact that Benny was kind of not doing a great job as an ally.
Yeah, he's absolutely, Benny was absolutely the lesser of two evils. Yes. And all he needed, I suppose, was just a talking to, be like, mate, head in the game.
Yeah.
Stop. Like, I don't think he
just
was,
yeah.
it was deliberate.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, like, I saw a lot of, honestly, like, apathy and mental exhaustion in him. And I sort of remembered times where I just sort of was like, oh, my God, I just need a break from all this talk and all this, you know, strategy and forward thinking. I just need just to be a bit in the moment. But you can't be in Survivor. But I really saw that with Benny. He was just sort of checked out a little bit at times, and all he needs from his alliance is just a little pep talk in those scenarios of just like, hey, you got to be switched on. Don't tell them shit that we're doing. You know, that's all he needed. You didn't need to get rid of him altogether, because he was a vote. He was a number, and it is so hard to get solid numbers in Survivor. And if he's someone that's not, you know, I don't want to call him stupid, but if he's not, like, the brightest and the most savvy,
he's not a brain.
Certainly not. He's probably not going to try go off and do his own moves. Whereas you have no idea what Simon is doing. I heard you say on Talking Tribal that he's relentless, and he is. It's so impressive. Like, he does not stop. He does not give up. It's just so admirable what Simon does. So why would you underestimate him and keep him around thinking, oh, we can get him another time? Like, can you? How do you know that? What if you don't go back to Tribal over the next few episodes and you don't get the chance to get rid of him again? Like, they were super resting on their laurels, I think, and I just don't endorse that at all when you're playing Survivor. You do not know what's going to happen, especially in Australian Survivor. We'll move on from
I know. I mean, I totally do agree. Like, in terms of, like, Benny's apathy, he says he spent, like, 35 days in transit. Like, he must have come from LA and had to, like, do hotel quarantine into the country and probably had to, like, quarantine for the show. So that's, like, 28 days. It sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
I don't envy that, having just come out of my own home quarantine. But I think, like, the apathy, I agree, like, can be a really good thing. Like, you rule the roost with some passive players. In Shannon's extra, like, her vote for Benny on the 10-play website, in the second vote, she's, like, basically says, like, Simon wants to be here more. Like, that is bad. Like, look how much he is trying at this. And I think that, like, by keeping him in the game, and we'll talk about Simon, it's not just keeping Simon in the game, which, you know, he goes on to find two idols, massive misstep, let's talk about how well he's doing. But even beyond that, like, you're a pretty new alliance. You have, like, a pretty tenuous new majority. Should we not kind of just let that
secure
sit in
that
zone? Yeah, exactly. Should we just make that a little better? I think it just shows that no one is safe in your alliance. It kind of throws out this recent loyalty to be really, really dicey. And the worst part to me, it takes away your vote split capabilities. Simon has an idol. If another one on the bottom, if Simon goes home, finds an idol like Danny or Chelsea or Emmett, then you have 6-3, you're fine. Now you have 5-4, you're not. So I do think you're right. You sit down, Benny, and be like, this is not what we do. We do not give the information. The wake-up call that you have is that Benny now is the minority's target because he seems like a viable option. He's going to get 4 votes. And if an idol is played, he's the one going home. And that's what he deserves because he was a liability. But I just think tomorrow's problem or the next day's problem, when you have vote split capabilities and you've kind of gotten rid of the leaders of those alliances, then we deal with Benny, who is a problem, but just a tiny little problem compared to Simon. Because
he's
Simon,
also a huge benefit.
Yeah, he's a number. That's it. He doesn't even need to be a person to you, but he is a number who will vote with you, and that is all that's important. Simon is not that. He is...
No, not at all.
He is just, like, really putting everything into this. And at that point, he's putting everything into being your opposition. So I credit mostly Simon on this and how hard he's trying. And I actually love watching Simon because he seems to care so much about this. And in a kind of climate of some apathy, as we've discussed, with someone like a Benny, as a viewer, that is someone I want you to keep in the game. As a player, no, but as a viewer, like, I'm rooting for Simon.
You can see, like, even when he talks around camp, like, I know this guy, like, at the very least at this stage, like, I imagine he thought he was going to go deep into the game. And then when he realized he sort of blew it with the team dynamics early on, well, now he's just like, God, I just need to get to merge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not going so well. So now he has to play.
He's playing day to day now. Like, I feel like he had this idea that the long term was guaranteed for him. But now what I really like, and I think a lot of, it's always a balance of playing day to day and also thinking long term. But I do like seeing players who, it's just, again, they're not resting on your laurels to be like, okay, let's secure this now. I want to mention that, I feel like you really see the different styles of Survivor play between the Brawns and the Brains at this stage. And it's maybe why they're sort of not thinking longer term with not keeping Benny around. In that I feel like you see some pretty solid alliances in the Brawn. Like, it's quite simple gameplay. It's like, these are the two alliances. You're either in or you're out. And that's sort of the structure of that tribe. Whereas in the Brains, they keep talking about fluidity.
It's more of a hierarchy, see how it kind of falls down.
Yeah, I think it's just to do with how they think really complexly about the game. They know there's twists and turns coming. They know it's a long game. So they actually don't want to necessarily lock into big alliances just yet, like, apart from the Joey and Co. So it is interesting. The way it's all been played out.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think someone who's kind of leading that charge and who has been from the beginning is Shannon, because she came out as, like, the leader of this alliance, I think, definitely in the eyes of the minority alliance. She's like a big player. She's like a vocal player. And that divide seems pretty concrete. And I do kind of, credit her approach or blame her approach in that way. And I'm really interested to get your take on it, because there's obvious comparisons between you and her, like the two models, right? But, like, the way you play the game to me is almost like a polar opposite thing. Like, I feel like your thing was to, like, float in the middle, and it was, like, very soft touch, whereas I feel like Shannon is like a bulldozer. She says exactly what she means, I guess, all the time, possibly to her detriment. Like, if you put, like, a soft kind of finger on the scale, she's putting, like, down the whole hand. That's how I see it between the two of you.
Yeah, I kind of sort of, in that tribal, when she was sort of laying it, you're right, says it exactly how it is to her detriment, laying it out there, being the mouthpiece for her alliance. I got sort of Matt Rogers vibes. Like, you know how there was a time where he was sort of playing Godfather and he was like, well, you know, convince me why I should keep you. And I'm running the ship here. I felt like Shannon was sort of adopting that. Similarly, she was adopting this idea of like, yes, I am, you know, you're coming for me and I'm at the top of this alliance. And she was quite happy to adopt that position, I guess, which I just don't know why anyone would want to do that at this early stage in the game. Like, you are so visible at this stage. And yeah, you're right. I definitely tried to float. I sort of was with Michelle, was trying to do what Haley and Rachel are doing at this stage in the game. And yeah, I do like Shannon. I love seeing a strong model player.
Yeah.
Love to see it. And just because it's a different game to me doesn't mean it's bad. But I personally wouldn't be so brash about showing my power, you know, in week two.
Yeah. I mean, from a narrative perspective, I do really love it. I love what you're saying is that she reminds you of Matt Rogers, because those are two very different people, but they are playing, I guess, in a similar way. And that's what I loved about Janine, too, that we had a godmother for once, because we have so many godfathers.
Yes.
And, like, how cool is it to see a 30-year-old woman lead the way in ways that I can criticize and be like, as a player, too loud, too messy, too alpha.
Yeah.
But usually I'm criticizing that in, like, alpha male players. So, yeah, I love it narratively.
Yes.
She's the one putting Benny on blast, that he's, you know, like, her little puppet. And she's, like, even, like, big guy, like, Danny's doing his own thing. But big guys like Danny, I think, are technically in, like, her alliance. Like, she feels like she's at the head of that. I don't think you want to be at the head of that. The way Joey is, it's very loud, it's very out there. But you're used to seeing a guy like Joey do it and not necessarily Shannon. So that's is fun narratively, as much as, like, I wouldn't opt to do that as a player on the game.
Yeah, I completely agree. Love to see it. Wouldn't do it myself, but really, really fun.
Thank you for taking one for the team. We love seeing strong women be strong. We don't want to be that strong in the game. We don't want to be that out there. Yeah. But, like, thank you for showing that representation. We appreciate
it. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And I think with the history of models on Australian Survivor, particularly, they've historically just gone along with the flow, which it's really nice to see a model Survivor player just not do that. we can't all be carbon copies of the same sort of thing. So yeah, it's good. I like seeing it. A little messy, but that's what makes it fun to watch.
I know. It is epic that she's not just, like, filling up space as, like, the pretty face, which you didn't either, but again, in, like, that very different way of being, like, a more active middle player. But she, like, usually you do, usually you have Benny narratively.
Yeah.
He's in charge of the alliance. He's the Joey. And she's just, like, the pretty girl taking up space, maybe doesn't have a confessional, but she looks good in a bikini. No, she's in charge. She's telling Benny to fight. And then she's kind of leading, or at least, like, in approach leading a flip against him for reasons that, again, we will criticize. Do not play that hard. But again, thank you for playing that hard. Like, she's flipped the narrative. And I actually really do love that.
Yeah, and all in a bikini.
Yeah, exactly. Actually,
the bikini still stays.
Exactly, yeah. No, I'm just imagining the edit where, like, Benny is the one telling Shannon she should fight for it, and we haven't got a confessional from her, and she leaves. Like, that's what we're used to a little bit. And that's not it.
It's too often what we see. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, that is girl really power. Enjoyable. Exactly. Girl power to do the wrong thing. Hey, girls can make their own choice. That's what feminism is, that women can make their own choices to play in ways that we will criticize and not agree
with. Exactly.
I love that.
Exactly.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
But I also, like, look, it's been 30 minutes and we're barely even talking about George. Like, is this even an Australian Survivor podcast? Because
are we watching the same show?
Exactly. I want to talk about the Brains tribe, who went to two tribal councils this week after their little streak of immunity wins. And George did some good this week. And a lot wrong, I would say. But you say you're loving his game. Like, what do you think about what he did this week? I guess let's start with the idol play. Comes out wearing an idol, plays an idol, tries to get swing votes on side. It doesn't really go the way that he planned. But, like, from a TV perspective, again, we admire the effort.
Yeah, I think I think the intention there, because there's always the question of, well, why wouldn't you just keep that secret and decide who goes home? And I think I would like to think that he considered doing that, but I think maybe the wearing it, firstly, I think he loves being the center of attention.
Mission accomplished.
that is something he really struggles to, it's an option he really struggles to not take. But I also think the benefit of him doing that was to, it was quite obvious that everyone was going to vote for George. So I think he's sort of saying, well, look, I have an idol. So now instead of thinking and talking about me all the time, why don't you all work out who you want? He's essentially set two alliances against each other. And in that vote, he didn't know how it was going to go, but it potentially creates turmoil. It tests loyalties. It could create new rivalries by stirring that up at camp pre-tribal. It's an opportunity to get putting the attention on himself. He's also in a way getting the attention off of himself by making everyone in his tribe sort of question, okay, well, who do we need to go for? Who do we need to bring in? Where does it go if we don't go for George? And I do see benefit in that. It's how you make it a few more days in, I think, by sort of getting people to go for each other as opposed to go for you. Like, think of new plans, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it caused chaos. And I guess if he's trying to fracture a majority, they did end up, I guess, slicing off one of their own in Mitch. So in that way, it kind of does work. But I don't agree with what he did, because as you're saying, like, all the votes are coming to him and he has an idol. That is a very, very powerful place to be. They don't have the power to split the vote. It's 7-4 and he has an idol. There's a lot of ways that you can play this that I think are great. And I think, unfortunately, he went with none of them or with parts of them that made it not work. Like, so if you want to be in that power position where you have an idol and they can't split, just don't tell anyone and just, play the idol as he does. So you've just idled out Laura. So then you get exactly who you want to get taken out.
But I feel like in that scenario where he doesn't tell anyone again, and, you know, after the last time he didn't tell anyone what he was doing, it would only create more animosity towards him.
I don't know if they'd be like, oh my God. More. Like, I think that's just a sale. Like, lean into the animosity at this point.
It's very true. Yeah, it's true. I will say, like, the way he plays and him only wanting to, it actually reminds, sorry, I keep relating players to other players, but it reminds me of when I was on, playing with Henry. You know, in the early stages of the game, I was interested in playing with him. And then it became very clear quite early on that the only way to play was Henry's way, Henry's plan. And if you didn't get on board with that, then it really pissed him off. And that was a real problem for you. And I feel like George, in a similar way, is playing like that, in that he's like, well, I want to do it my way. I want to, you know, I'm not really going to have a big discussion about my next move. I'm going to walk in wearing the idol to tribe. And I don't care if that brings the attention onto my other alliance members. And it would be pretty frustrating to work with a player like George out there.
I mean, that's something we'll talk about with Wei. Like, I think that was a massive driving factor in her flipping from him. I just think he didn't want to be a part of it. And I think that I totally see your point. If he comes in and surprises them again by voting out Laura, they do hate him. But do they hate him more than, like, him coming in with the idol? Like, they seem pretty aggrieved by that as well. But I see that That's true. Being, like, look, if you think George is going to whip something out at every single tribal council that you didn't know about, I don't know, I maybe it would somehow be even worse for his already pretty terrible social capital. So I see that point. Okay, fine. We don't want to idol out Laura, which we possibly had the power to do. Fine. Another plan. Yeah. You come out, you wear the idol, and this is a formula that I have about wearing the idol, which is that if you are wearing the idol and the majority do have enough numbers to split on you, you definitely have to play it. Now, I'm sorry that I even have to use this rule because that seems obvious, but it's something that Russell Hans didn't do in 2018. So that's why I put that rule in. But if they don't have enough numbers to split, which the Brains majority or Koei didn't have, then they're never going to vote for you. Like, I truly believe that. It's just human nature. Like, they're not going to pile all the votes on someone who's wearing it just in case, in the tiny little possibility that you do play it. I mean, George does play it. In I guess, you know, a flexible possibility of you playing it. It's a very scary thing because then you have all the power. If there's another viable option, which they did have, they obviously had Mitch. They went for Mitch. They could have done Baden. They could have done Kara. They could have done Wei. I just don't think they're ever going to vote for him. And you have to back yourself there. Like, it is a scary thing, I'm sure, to not play the idol, but you have to back yourself that fear that you've created in them gives you implicit immunity even without playing it. And I, even though it worked out for George because Kara ends up playing an idol on him, the fact that he went out of that tribal council without an idol, I was like, no, you've done so much right. Like, you've scared them away from you. You've actually scared them from a member of their own possible majority who's voting for you. They voted him out. But, like, the capper on that is that you don't play the idol because you've earned it, because you scared them and, like, back yourself in that fear. So I was upset that he played the idol then, because that just, like, completely erodes the move for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, what I was saying before was that what he successfully did was he made the Koei alliance.
Thank you for going with that. A lot of people
it's perfect. Yeah. It's great. I feel a little bit bad for the rest of the players, but, you know, that's how the edit.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's the edit.
Don't blame us. Blame the editors.
We just call it how we see it.
Exactly.
I do think he got the Koei alliance to sort of look at other members that weren't him, which I think that's great for him. Because that could piss off a lot of people when someone on George's sort of side has the Koei alliance coming from them. Well, then they're never going to want to work with Koei, are they? They're going to be like, oh, well, they tried to vote for me, and I don't know. Yeah, you're right. He did do everything right, and the fact that and it is human nature to not risk it.
Yeah.
So messy. It's a bit messy.
Well, the fear is that you wear it and then you still go home. Like, it is just like an intrinsic fear that you have that, like, you can't almost analyze from the couch, because you must be really scared in that moment. That it has to be just the power of your own play saving you and letting you keep the idol. I just do believe that they're not going to vote for you. And if they do, it's incredibly unlucky, because that's not what happens.
Yes.
Like, if they're worried about, like, there are some things where, like, for example, the majority vote for, like, Malcolm and the three amigos because they know that they're voting for Philip. But, like, if the majority don't know who you're voting for or are not okay with your possible target, which it would have been Laura, like, they're just not taking that risk. So I wish that he would have kept it. And I think it is, like, I swear by that rule. I really do, that if they don't have the numbers to split, like, just keep your idol. You've earned it. Like, that's what you've done with that big play. Like, you've earned it to keep it for another day. So I wish he had kept it. I also think, like, maybe some other avenues, like, maybe to, you know, because he loses the battle here. I liked how he got Baden on side. I thought that was really good. That's a really fun, like, alliance of convenience. But he does lose the battle for the numbers of Haley and Rachel. Like, is there a way that you just go to them with the idol and be like, hey, again, like we said last week, like, make this a really social move. We're all rallying around our idol. Is there a way to, like, bring them in more? Again, we didn't hear a lot from Haley and Rachel about their decision, but maybe there's a way to do that. But I think, like, there are parts of this plan, like, any of it I would have been fine with, just, like, pretty much anything other than what he did with the idol.
Yeah. I think there's also a possibility, you know, for all the work that he could possibly do on a tribe, maybe, and probably rightly so, he doesn't even know if the people on his side necessarily like or trust him either. And I think almost when you, and maybe it was a sort of a buyer's remorse, sort of like he did this big move where he wears the idol into camp, and then he thinks, oh, what if that really pissed everyone off?
Yeah.
And now everyone's, you know, doing, like, possibly banding together and, tricking me. You know, maybe I'm not hearing the truth from people. So just to be sure, he's extra paranoid, and he decides to go against logic and play it for himself, just in case, because he actually doesn't know if he can trust anyone in the tribe. I do think Haley and Rachel ultimately went with the Koei Alliance because it seems that because they're a stronger unit in that tribe, I think the fallout would have been worse if they sided with the George side of camp. I think the George side of camp,
like a flip, yeah.
Yeah, they're all sort of just, it seems like everyone in that alliance is all in that alliance out of circumstance. And I think a lot of them are actually prepared to move around, come a game twist. I don't know that they're all that solid of a team, whereas the Koei team is. Like, they are a set four. And so I think Haley and, Rachel.
Yeah.
I think they thought, okay, well, what's going to have the least fallout? It's going to be by siding with the Koei. So in a way, I think it would have taken a lot for George to pull them over.
That's true.
And side with him.
I do agree. I'm just thinking, like, what could be done? Because at that point, we do think, like, his social capital was, like, kind of in the toilet. And I would agree that for them, I wish we got more airtime and more understanding behind their decision. But I think that this is fine. Like, I think they probably just connect with that side better, being 5 and 6. The hierarchy seems pretty clear to everyone. But I think, like, being 5 and 6
is
enough to, like, get you to the next phase of the game, stay, like, more unified for a potential swap, alienate fewer people, because it just, I mean, like, obviously George is pretty pissed off about Rachel, but it seemed like, again, as you're saying, like, a bit of a more natural step. So I don't have any problem with them. My only problem is I wish I could have seen more behind that decision. But I think it makes quite a bit of sense for them.
Yes.
And just to put a fine point on the George stuff before we move on to the next vote, like, if you, listener, are ever playing Survivor and you're wearing your idol and they don't have the numbers to split, I'm begging you to back yourself and not play it, which a lot of players have done. And if you go home on that because of me, because I'm telling you that now, like, I will buy you a beer. But I'm just, you know, in the future, please, I will bet my life on this theory.
I think that's a good consolation prize.
Yeah, exactly. $500,000 a year. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, let's talk about this majority as we move into, like, this voter and the next vote, because the hierarchy, which we only learned in episode 5, is Joey, Laura, Georgia, and Andrew, apparently, Rachel and Haley, and I guess Mitch in that, like, middle group before Mitch is absolutely not. And everyone seems to know this hierarchy. So, I mean, let's talk through their decision. We've talked through what George is doing. We've talked through what Haley and Rachel, we assume, are doing within, you know, no edit. But their decision is to take out Mitch, you know, and they could have taken out Kara, Aiden.
Kara would have been.
Yeah, they really suffered for that. What did you think of this decision?
I do not understand it either. And again, I hate to blame the edit, but I feel like there's so much we're not getting, because I'm sure there's a lot of decisions people are making that genuinely just don't make sense. But I feel like there must have been a reason to get rid of Mitch. The edit showed like Mitch was a solid fifth person in that alliance. And it appeared that they sort of turned on this fifth person for the sake of it, because they couldn't get George. And I sort of looked at, like, who else would they go for? Because why would they go for a fifth? Maybe they couldn't go for anyone else. And I thought, okay, well, Baden's strong. They don't want to get rid of strength, sure. Maybe Wei, they think they could work with Wei in the future. But Kara is pretty strongly aligned with George. They seem to get on. She's, you know, she's not a huge challenge asset. Whereas Mitch is. So they say, like, let's keep Mitch very much in the fold, make him feel like he's one of us. So if he is feeling that way, why would you vote to get rid of him? Again, I think it's similar to what we saw on the Bronze Tribe, where people are resting on their laurels. They're thinking, oh, you know, the next tribal council is promised, the next day is promised. And so I think they're thinking a little bit too far ahead by turning on a great number like Mitch. But again, maybe what we're not seeing in the edit is Mitch isn't actually as close as he appears to be. Maybe it's obvious to them that if there is a switch up, Mitch might try to form a new alliance, whereas Kara probably not. Maybe Kara has an affinity to the Brains tribe and they think, oh, well, you know, maybe we can work with. There seems to be conflicting information. Like if Mitch is a strong fifth of that alliance, then why vote him out? I can't see any reasoning as to why they would get him out, which is why I think we're not seeing everything in the edit.
Well, I mean, to play devil's advocate, and it is devil's advocate because I disagree with the move too. I mean, Mitch, in my exit interview, his closest relationships, he said, were Rachel, Haley, and Kara, which is obviously none of the four. So maybe he is less close in that way. But if you were at Kara, you just solve that connection. Then maybe they were scared that George would play the idol on someone else. So, yeah, if you vote for Kara, maybe he's so close to Kara that you're scared that that won't work. Possibly.
Yes.
And then I also feel what we were given was that Joey was like, I'm taking out the threat now. And that maybe might speak to what you're saying about people pre-season being like, don't let us down. Like, he's maybe thinking, like, this is the big move. And it absolutely was, as a viewer. As George says, you guys are ruthless. But from a strategic perspective, I do disagree with it. Despite all of that stuff, you know, despite possible fears of an idol, I do think, why is everyone giving up their split vote capabilities? Is this something no one cares about but me? Because I care a lot. I'm always thinking about whether people have the capability to split. And it becomes important for them in the next episode where they have to pull over Wei. I'm like, but if you voted out Wei yesterday, you'd have Mitch and he'd be voting with you on the split. So while they did cover it and make it work, and I do have to credit that, I'm also like, you dug yourself into a hole and like, good job digging yourself out. But like, why did the hole exist to begin with?
And that's the beauty of when you are in a tribe full of lots of numbers. Like, you do have a bit more that you can split the vote more. People aren't considering that opportunity. I did notice that Haley said, "I see your game, Mitch. You know, not playing in the front, not playing in the back, playing in the middle." So that to me just indicates, well, maybe he's just not that trustworthy, and Kara is. Maybe it's just as simple as that.
Although that is what Haley is doing, right? Like, that's exactly what Haley is doing.
Yes, exactly. And if I saw another person out there playing the game that I was playing, which was to float around in the middle, I'd be like, "That's trouble. That's power. If they're getting away with it, I don't want it." So I would have also done what Haley did, and been all on board with getting a like-minded player out. But yeah, in terms of the Koei 4, I think Kara would have been better, but maybe but maybe there's something I don't know. And it has to be to do with edit. It's got to be.
I think it's just big move items. Like, I'm now on the record of being like very much against voting out a number every time it's happened this season, all three times in 5.5 tribal councils. Janelle didn't like it. Keep a number. Mitch, keep a number. Like, Benny, keep numbers, keep vote split capabilities. Yeah. No one seems to care about this but me. I mean, they did end up caring about it like 20 hours later, but I do think that we should all be thinking more about the split vote all the time, because there are so many idols in the season. Like, there have been...
It's too safe, Shannon. It's all too predictable. It's too safe. No one wants to do that.
You know what's nice? Safety in a game where there's a new idol every single episode.
Like, I know.
And where if you vote out people, they might come back. Like, I think AU has normalized this, the fact that you could just come back. Like, that should make people want to blindside a lot less, because it might come back to haunt you more than any other franchise, where there are so many idols, just ridiculous amount of idols. Like, shouldn't we be playing as safe as possible, because there's so much chaos thrown at you by the actual game? Like, let's to each other be quite safe and calm. But no, like, they also are attacking each other and being chaotic to each other, and then throwing all these advantages and twists. It's just like a recipe for disaster for anyone who's in a power position.
Truly, this week, my brain has hurt with how much things keep getting shaken up by, like you said, they're doing it to themselves. There's idols coming into play and whatnot, but it could be so much easier at this stage. there's so many easier options. Just, yeah, you're right. Just to play it safe. I mean, but again, like we like to see the chaos, but obviously
we like it.
It's like we've said at the top of the episode, at the top of this episode, it's not the sensible moves. They're just not going with those moves, which is fun to watch, but hard to endorse.
Yeah. I mean, another questionable move that I want to talk about, Mitch votes for George. He said in his exit interview with me, like, he thought they were splitting on George and Wei. So he obviously didn't have the right tell of those dynamics and that he went home and that was not happening. Yes. And they didn't have the numbers to do that. But I just kind of wanted to, I mean, hopefully everyone sticks around for the exit interview, but that's what he's saying. So I guess that solves that questionable thing. Another questionable thing that I care so much about split votes. I think about them all the time. And I just have to talk about it because this was just like underratedly terrible to me. They put Wei on the George side of the split vote. Now, like, I know that makes it dramatic because she votes for George in her voting confessional. Imagine if she just like held up Kara, wouldn't have the same kind of narrative weight to it. But what they allowed to happen, and again, credit, you got Wei. Maybe your read is totally right that she's on your side, but there has to be even a minuscule risk that you don't have her. What they've allowed her to do by putting her on the George side of the split, which was 4-3, instead of the Kara side, is she could switch back to the Minority Alliance, and then they don't even need the idol. They could win out 4-3-3, which would have been
completely
particularly epic. I would have loved to see it. We'll talk through Wave's decision. I would have loved it, but I was like, Koei! Joey, whoever's in charge of this, like, what are you doing? Because if they put her on the Kara side, then she's powerless in that. Because even if she goes back to them, it's a 4-4-2. They would need to at least play the idol on George to win out on a 4-2. But this lets them keep an idol, and she could win 4-3-3. Would have been epic. Didn't get to see it, but yeah, you guys are the brains tribe.
Your mind.
They are the brains tribe.
No, but your mind is they are, and we do expect more from them, but your mind is made for this game. I think.
I love that you say that because it did anger me. And then my brother called me after with the same person. And he's like, I couldn't even focus on the emotionality of the moment because I was so pissed off that they put her on the wrong side of the split. And I was like, we are from the same family.
Yes. Yeah. I think it just goes to show you the confidence they had in Wei. Like, even when Jonathan was walking back with the urn, I actually thought that Wei had flipped back because I just that's what they were building George and Kara up to be triumphant. It just sounded that way in the music. Like, you know, I felt like as a viewer, I was being encouraged to root for them, and I'm like, they're not going to build you up and really root for these people just for it to all sort of go away, and they didn't actually. They didn't quote unquote win, but I think they did win in the end because Kara stayed in the game. But when I was watching the Koei Alliance, they were very smug and smiling, like they totally knew what was going to go down. They totally on the second vote, they totally knew that Wei would stick. They knew Wei would go with them the first time, and I looked at their faces and they seemed to really be quite sure that was. Going to come to fruition. So to me, like that risky move just maybe indicates the faith they had in Wei, maybe conversations they had pre-tribal. Like, I will say this about the game. I don't know anyone who goes into tribal not 100% sure of their vote. And
except
honestly, Dani, at that stage,
all the time.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I mean, sometimes it does change up, but that's so, 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 so rare. Like, so often before you go into tribal council, you've decided, you absolutely know, no matter what chaos goes down, like, you've made your mind up. And I think they must have had a conversation with Wei where she basically went all in and said, I'm with you guys. I'm sick of George. He needs to go. Like, you can count on me. And I think I feel like Wei is quite a sincere character. So I think if she ever said something like that she gave her word, they would have believed her. And I would have probably believed her. I would have been like, Wei is not going to lie to me. So maybe that's why. But you're right. It's foolish regardless.
Numerically foolish. I do like credit to the read because so much of this game is on the read and they did get it right. And it's a different set of things that happened than had she flipped to a 4-3-3 would have been one of the coolest moves ever of all time. That's not what happened, and that is a credit to them, and possibly socially as well, that she's coming to them saying, I don't want to work with George, possibly socially just being like, we'll put you on the George vote. Maybe there's some credit there of really, like, bringing her in. I just think, like, risky, so risky, even if it's, like, the smallest risk, like, to go home on that, believe me, I cry years later for people who go home on incorrect splits because it's just so senseless. So it wasn't that, but the fact that it could have been, I just wanted to pay voice to it. This is not the stuff I give on Talking Tribal, by the way. This is the stuff I give an hour into RJP. But I do think there's something there. And look, a lot of people on this tribe to talk about, we haven't even got to Kara, the Macedonian Jesus. I want to talk about Joey, because I think he's, like, kind of, I don't know, like, the fan base, I think, seems quite split on Joey. They seem kind of mad in general at anyone getting a lot of the airtime and taking it up, which I get. It's not their fault, guys. It's Edda's fault, but...
Yeah, no, yes.
For me, like, because he's definitely trying hard. Like, he has a lot of energy, more energy than I have, like, on my best day, and he's, like, 2 weeks into this, like, outback adventure. And I'm, like, never mad at someone trying to be entertaining on television. Like, you're on television. I, like, thank you for trying to give, like, really, you know, emotional confessionals and being really entertaining. Some people think he's too much. On Talking Tribal, I called him Luke Light. There might be something there. How are you feeling about Joey, like, as a character?
I think there's a lot we're not seeing that Joey's doing. It's like I said before.
We are seeing a lot of Joey, though, but it is a lot of, like, George, why? Why, George, are you doing this to me?
That's true. It's, well, what I feel like we're seeing of Joey is the sort of the Luke Tokey vibe, and I know it's a comparison that everyone's drawing, and it's because it's, like, the cadence in which he speaks and, you know, the...
Because he says baby a lot.
It's baby. Like it's all that. It's totally, I totally see it. And that's what we're seeing a lot of. That's where we're seeing a lot of Joey. And I actually think that's where he's the most polarizing, because people don't either feel it's sincere. Maybe he's coming off as cocky. Maybe people don't like the continuous narrating. But the thing about Joey is, I think he's actually more nuanced than he comes off in his confessionals. But we just don't get to see that. Like, he's obviously got a strong social pull, I think, in the tribe. He seems to get along with everyone. He gets even along with the other tribe. Mm-hmm. This is why I want to see more of the relationships being built outside of what's going on with George. I like him. I do think at this stage, though, he is really putting himself in a very visible position. He's obviously on the side being quite vocal in his confessionals, but I think it's starting to bleed through into the tribe dynamics. Like, he's very clearly the leader. He's taking on that role comfortably. Like, he's speaking on behalf of the alliance to Wei, nudging her and saying, hey, we want you in our team. Like, they're not wise moves I would necessarily do myself, but I do like him. I think he's really thinking about the game. I think he's quite savvy. He's not Shannon Gates smart with the game, savvy with the game, but I do think he's I like that he's really trying to have a hand in the direction of the game. And I think it's more nuanced than what we're saying. That's my summation of Joey.
Yeah, it's tough because we get a lot from him, but it is all George-focused. It's the George hole on brains where if you're going to get airtime, you better be talking to or talking about George or be George. And, like, while it is a lot of airtime, it is largely in George-related activities, so we don't get to see a lot outside it. Actually, I watched Bitches before and after video. Like, they ask some questions before the season and then after they get voted out on 10play. And, like, how do you think you'll be remembered? And before, he was like, I think I'll be remembered as, like, the doctor who was, like, more than just a doctor or something. And then after, he's like, I think I'll be remembered for not getting along with George. And I, like, laughed out loud because I was like, yeah, you, like, 100%. You will always be...
articulated so well.
I was like, what a good read of that. Like, yeah, you'll be dictator doctor who George didn't like. 100%. Yeah. People won't remember your name, but they'll remember that you had something to do with George. So it is difficult because it's airtime, but it's... this very specific type of airtime when he's clearly got, like, a lot going on in general. And I thought, like, I do agree there's stuff beneath the surface. Like, I thought he did really well when he went to Braun. I know people were like, oh, he told him a lot. I think he made connections. You can see him already, like, kind of vibing with Simon, even just, like, beyond when he was at the Braun camp. And like a lot, some of the information was technically correct, but also like kind of not.
He quite inconsequential stuff that will be found out at some
point. Like, so people expect something, surely. Like, they know Mitch went home. As if they're not going to find out that George wore and played an idol. Like, you'd find out 30 seconds into a swap that
happened.
Absolutely. Yeah, and yeah, the way that he says, like, Mitch was collateral, that's different. Like, that makes it sound like Mitch was idled out by George. It's also not incorrect, so no one could be mad at him for lying. Mitch was collateral. He was your collateral because you made a ruthless move to cut out a member of your majority.
Absolutely.
But he didn't say it in those words. Like, it was a different way of phrasing that, right?
Yeah. I also think a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, it's so bad that he was taken over. It's such a disadvantage to be taken over to the other tribe. But I think Joey, of all people, was primed to go over to the other tribe. He's got friends. It's not like he, you know, who would have been really awful to be brought over and would have caused a lot of upset, I think, in the Brains tribe, would be if they brought over a George, like someone that everyone in the tribe doesn't trust, doesn't like.
And would have given them a lot more time. They would have been able to talk about George. They would have got so many more confessions.
Absolutely. But Joey, like he's in a solid position in his tribe. He can do the work for his alliance by making inroads with the Bronze tribe. I think he towed the line really quite well. Like you said, he said inconsequential stuff. And you're right. He didn't really explain his role in the boats, which is great because they don't, the Bronze tribe don't necessarily know the amount of influence that Joey has back at Reigns, which is a lot. So yeah, props to Joey again, like smart guy.
I thought that this was
just not Shannon Gates smart.
No, I just don't, just that simple math. It's literally math you can count on one hand, each vote on one hand, two hands at least. So look, they had 10 people in the tribe, two hands, guys. We can definitely work out this math, but I like the way that he did this. I mean, you've been in a similar position, right? You were taken over in a reward. And, like, as if you're going to give them nothing, I feel like people will be really mad about that.
Yeah, well, in my situation, again, I was I pissed off Luke. Like, Luke really did not like it when I was chosen to go over. But, again, it was one of those things where I was primed for that not to be a huge disadvantage to me. I had alliance members back at camp that I felt quite solid in, apart from Luke, who wasn't happy with it, but the others I felt quite secure with. But also the people that brought me over were my old alliance members, well, sort of alliance members, in Henry and Annalise. So it was good for me to go over and talk to them and get a good read on what was happening over at that tribe. So I think it's probably an underestimated thing. Like, when you do bring a person over from another tribe, I think instead of sort of asking, "Oh, who's going to talk?" I think what really the what you should be trying to do is what's going to piss off the other tribe the most. How can we fracture that tribe by bringing over someone that, I don't know. I'm realizing now that maybe that unites the tribe with a common enemy. But I don't really know what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I think like the what I liked about it from Braun bringing him over, and what you're saying about your connections deepening. Obviously, yours was after like swaps and everything, and they've never met. But what I liked about Joey, other than George, because George seems like the obvious one because he's clearly going to talk because he's talking on the mat. You'll just find out like literally every single thing that happened with Joey. They found out like a version of the story. But I still think it was a good decision, especially someone like Simon, who I just really feel is vibing with Joey. But like, also, I just think that that's a possible connection for anyone. All of you are hanging out with him. Like, that's all of you have the opportunity there to make a relationship with him. And he's long for the game. Like, he's clearly in a power position. He's like strong in the challenges. George shouldn't have survived the next day. He did, but I don't think he'll survive much longer. Like, is that a connection that's going to have any bearing for you down the road? Whereas, like, you might get to a swap with Joey, and that might be really useful and be a relationship that you can utilize further in the game.
Absolutely. And I do think the relationship between Simon and Joey is going to pay dividends. Like, that to me is a match made in heaven. And I can only I do feel like there's the sort of switch ups happening that will be happening soon. So yeah, you're right. Great. It was a good call to bring over Joey. And with not much fallout, I think that's obvious by the fact that we didn't actually get to see Joey return back to camp. Mm-hmm. It obviously didn't matter. Like, no one was really bothered, obviously, because he just goes back to camp and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, clearly he has a lot of power at that camp, so, like, who's really going to be that mad at him? Like, I think that he's done, obviously, really well socially. Like, I was talking about this with my brother, and he was saying, like, any issues we have with Joey are strategic, don't agree necessarily with the Mitch move, see parts of it, but don't agree. The split vote I've talked about, I didn't agree. Like, you know, they often say that social and strategy are one and the same, and I think that they can be slightly separate, and I think this to me is a separate thing, because I think strategically I have, like, small little problems, but socially I'm like, you've definitely pulled in the right numbers, you definitely have the social game on lock across both tribes, it seems, and that is to be, like, extremely commended.
Absolutely, I agree.
Speaking of the social game, let's talk about Kara. Yes. Let's talk about what happened here, the twist. I mean, this was, like, a crazy tribal council. Like, first to play the idol on George to save him, then she goes home. It's everyone, I think, was already reeling. Then she gets saved. It was like, I need to lie down after this. It was a beautiful human moment. Like, yes, I should come on and be like, you idled yourself out of the game. Not a lot of people have done that in Survivor history. Are you on the Brains tribe? But I no, because she knew what she was doing. I think that she probably didn't think Wei was with them. And either way, like, that was enough of a risk to pretty much just be complete and utter Tarzan level self-sacrifice. Like, that's what she did. And you can talk about it analytically and strategically all you want. Like, it was no strategic move. Like, it was a human moment and move.
I really hope so.
Right? Really? Do you think that she did this wrong? She's on the Brains tribe.
I know. But part of me, I think it's just because I just 100% and totally cannot relate to that sort of behavior. I almost feel like she thought, oh, maybe we'll go to Rocks, or maybe something else will happen, or maybe she's.
But you can count this math on two hands, Sarah.
I don't know. Maybe she was tired. But this is maybe me just not relating to such a degree that I'm coming up with. Like, did she screw that up? Did she know that she was doing that? I also was super, super emotional. I was so rooting for them. I loved their relationship. I was crying when George was crying. I think as a politician, he's probably not used to people self-sacrificing. It's probably so foreign
to him. Is anyone used to people self-sacrificing for you? I feel like that is, like, something that can rarely happen in life.
It's
quite a big thing to happen to you.
Yeah, it was so good to watch. But yeah, I was like, why? I was also like George being like, why? Why did you do that? Did you know you're doing, do you know what you're doing?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so I was happy to see her stay.
Apparently.
And then, but also one thing that does annoy me, and it annoyed me in our season with Tarzan, I don't know Kara, but I really feel like with Tarzan, he's just bloody giving up at that stage. To me, it's when you idle yourself out of the game, a bit of me dies inside, because I'm like, well, you just gave up when the pretense of saving someone. And you know, Kara is an empath, and I don't actually think that Kara and Tarzan are. I think when Tarzan saved Tessa, I think he knew how great that made him look, and he was probably over the game at that stage. And so he was like, I'm going to go out as a huge hero saving someone else. But I really think if Kara did save George for the sake of saving him, I do think it's because she cares deeply about George, and she really sees him as a complex human that he is. And she wants this experience for him. And in this this time around, I do think it's a lot more of a if it wasn't a fuck up, I think it's a lot more of a purely motivated and beautiful moment. And I too was getting emotional, even though I couldn't understand. I was also like, oh, it's so beautiful. I'm so excited to see the consequences of her staying in the game. I know people hate it. I know people think it's unfair, but I love it. To me, Survivor represents life in that way. You never know what's around the corner. You do not know. You might think you have everything worked out or everything's against you, and then all of a sudden it's not. You just got to stay open and stay prepared.
Yeah, like you say that Tarzan kind of maybe wanted out and could go out on a high that would get him like another all-star season. Kara like seems keen to go on. Like she will go on in the game, like Macedonian Jesus.
Yes.
That's what happened to Macedonian Jesus. Again, I'm sorry about the Judaism. I don't really know what happened there. But I hadn't even considered, it's funny that you say like you can't consider that it was like such a selfless thing because you'd never play like that. Like I can't consider that it would be a screw up because that's like impossible to me that someone could get the numbers that wrong. So I'm like, it has to be selfless. There's no other way that this could be.
I think that's an interesting point.
Yeah. I mean, I had not considered that she screwed this up. There has been like, I think Rowan, he gave the idol to Phoebe and went home, and that wasn't like a selfless thing. I think that was just, he didn't expect it to go that way. Tarzan was.
Yes.
Like Tarzan, I think even voted for Tess and was like, give him hell kind of thing.
Yes.
So he knew what he was doing.
Yes.
There's been like a couple of other examples. One other example I can think of from Survivor South Africa that was more people idling themselves out, which was like not on purpose. I do think that this was self-sacrifice. She seems to want to go on in the game. I don't think it's a quit by any means. To me, it was just like, she is an empath, which is apparently a thing. She's a mum, as she said, which apparently, you know, she was caring. And like
it was a character trait.
Exactly. And like, it's funny the way that Australian Survivor is and the way that it's edited is that like, we had not heard much. I think we'd been briefly shown, or it was briefly alluded to, that Kara and George were even remotely close. Like, I think the episode before. But then in the space of this one episode.
Like, she asked him if he was okay, and he nearly looked like he was about to cry, and then that was it.
So, like, definitely at the beginning of the week, like, this bond has not been set up. It's definitely, like, George and Wei. Now, like, we get, like, introduced to this bond, and now she's sacrificing for him. But, like, you're into it, right? Like, and George is talking about how much the game means to him, which, like, really resonates with me. And then she's sacrificing for him. In the space of, like, an hour, like, this has become, like, a really relevant story to you, and you're, like, cheering for her to do it, or you're, like, crying. And it's, like, did we even know that this was, like, anything? Like, an hour of screen time, like, ago, or, like, two? Like, no, not really. But, like, now,
but
it's the most important relationship in the game, and she's self-sacrificed. Probably.
Isn't that so symptomatic of how George is playing, though? I think George is so like, you know, I'm willing to work with anyone, and I will form a strong bond quickly if I come across someone who's responsive to me. And if maybe, you know, in those few days, started week two, maybe he did. It was just he realized, oh, I'm actually really close with Kara. I'm all in with Kara. Like,
All the Australian Survivor edit only tells us exactly what we need to know as we need to know it a moment before that.
Well, also, I will say that, but this is another reason why I thought it was possibly a fuck up. And I will, sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this,
fine, I guess.
This podcast. firstly, I also relate to being quite tired at Tribal and being just totally mind bended, especially if that's not your day-to-day life, thinking strategically 24/7. It can be quite exhausting. So I can see that happening, especially when it's like, you know, they vote again and, you know, things are changing. But what made me sort of think, oh, maybe it was a screw-up, was when she was kept in the game, and you're right, it seemed like she wanted to keep going. To me, I was like, yeah, see, that's why that's to me indicating she was like, oh no, I screwed up. I've just idled myself out. But then lo and behold, she's still in the game and she's like, oh, thank God.
Right. But George did tell her to her face, like, I mean, and George had just got the idol play wrong the night before. So maybe like, maybe you don't trust it, but he's like, don't play it on me. Either play it for yourself or on no one. If she had played it on no one, she could have kept the idol and kept herself in the game. It's not even just that, you know, she saved George. Like, she literally idled herself out of the game. Had she done nothing, he would have gone home. She could have kept her idol. I think there's a third thing. Like, there's the one thing of, it's a screw up. There's the other thing of, I don't want to play on anymore, let you go. And then I do think there's like a third thing of like, I do want to play on. I'm enjoying myself. I'm definitely keen to be here. But I also, as a guest, a mum and an empath, and like the best human ever, and like some iteration of Macedonian Jesus, feel like I care more about your experience than mine. Like, you seem to care about more. I'd love to stay. But, like, it looks like it's really going to be one of us, so, like, I have chosen you. I don't understand that level of selflessness. I don't. But I think that...
Me neither.
But it seems like that she's that kind of person. I can only aspire to be that selfless. Yeah. Would I do that for someone I met 2 weeks ago? No. Would I do that for most people in my life? Probably also not.
Yeah. I think you've convinced me. Like, you're right. Like, with all those factors, it's got to be options.
You've convinced me. I'm just like, surely not. Surely not. Because that makes it tragic. Like, it's beautiful the way I thought it was. The way you think it is really tragic. So I don't... I mean, she does get saved.
This is my thought. I think maybe she, like, because when George was like, what are you doing? I think she must have been like, oh, was that not the right thing? And then as the votes were being read, she was like, no, I'm actually okay with this. Like, okay. Oh, maybe,
so some combination of, just like, let it be what it'll be. Because, look, I hate the non-elimination twist. Obviously, have to rant about it a small degree. Like, JLP told me pre-season that this was going to be, like, the best versions of non-elimination twist. And I'm like, JLP, what are you talking about? Because they already did this. Like, they sent Tara and Annalise to your camp. I didn't like it then. Yeah. I continue to hate it. It doesn't have any of the things that make non-elimination episodes more palatable to me, which is, like, transparency, telling them even just before the vote. Like, even with Tara and Annalise, at least it looked a little weird because there was, like, a stool there and two people were going home. Like, at least for the Annalise vote, you could know, like, something was going on. This was, like, completely unforeseeable to the point where the whole audience didn't know until she walked out to that sign. She didn't know, we didn't know, they didn't know. So, like, that's so not transparent.
Yeah, it doesn't allow for the strategic gameplay and the competitors to actually have a chance to be in control of their own game, which, it's not fair.
It's extremely unfair to Chloe. Like, they'll probably get screwed by this and they really don't deserve it. Like, they voted her out. They made that work. They shouldn't have to suffer for it. But because I felt she had self-sacrificed, I was like, this is unfair, but weirdly, it's just, like, if that makes sense. Like, on a game level, so unfair to Chloe. They don't deserve it. She doesn't deserve it. Like, the game is the game, and no one could foresee this, and there are definitely better ways of doing it than just sending her to Braun and having, like, no repercussions for her actions, noble or not. Like, you know, she voted herself out of the game. Like, she should go. But...
at the very least, she should fight to stay in.
Yeah,
like, you know, at least do like some sort of challenge or
like at the very least, just like it's funny because had she known something was up, like she might not have played her idol because she might have been like, if he had said something like, this is not going to be an elimination just before the vote or before the idol play, she probably keeps her idol.
Yeah.
Then George gets sent to Braun, which ironically I do think is a better fate for him because Braun are so divided that he's probably like, good over there. They're probably fighting for his number as they say they're going to do with Kara, where he's like now left on brains without Wei, without Kara, without an idol. Like, I think he's screwed. I think it would have been a lot better had he gone. But like, because no one knew it, now she's like, she wasted an idol to get herself voted out to still be in the game. Definitely more transparency was needed. But then like, as a human moment, it was like, all right. It was like the survivor gods came down and were just like, you can stay.
I also think I'm just quietly, and I know the Australian Survivor producers are not adverse to tweaking timelines, I think sometimes. But I do think that was the return into the game was set up for George to possibly go, because it was just so convenient that it's such a huge player who was on the edge of leaving the game, would have had a safety net if he'd have left.
I mean, George has had an advantage, two idols and a twist in the three tribal councils that he's been to get him out of holes. He has not been vulnerable at one tribal council yet. He's been, you know, immune two times from an idol and he sent himself out of the one tribal council. And even if none of that had worked, there was this twist. Like, am I so naive that I don't think that this was for George? Like, I just think that they usually do have some sort of non-elimination early. They did, I think, at exactly this time in All Stars with Shawnee and Zach. It's all on the level. I might be naive, but I feel like they've let huge players go before and not get saved a lot of the time. That's true. People who were disliked, like Tara in your season, like, I loved her journey, but the audience was not on board. She gets saved, and then, like, it ends up swimming over a fan favorite like AK. Like, I've always felt the non-eliminations, while I don't like them, I've always believed they're on the level, but I might be naive in that.
Yeah. No, I do think that's a good point. And I don't think, in all fairness, I don't think they plan, like, a lot of people talk about producers planting idols. I really don't think that that is something they do, or like encourage people, certain people to find idols. I really don't think that that's what's happening there. And I think especially with George, you see the way he finds idols. It's Kara that finds it. And then it's actually Baden that gets the clue first to get the idol. Like there were no guarantees that George was going to get this idol both times.
And he does seem like one of the only super fans on that tribe. When he says everyone's just been like doing survival stuff and I've been looking, and like, I can believe that. Like, it seems like a lot of people who really haven't seen the show, and George says he's loved it since he was 11. Like, I buy that.
I completely agree. Yeah. Maybe it's just me, you know, buying into the skepticism of Survivor Twitter, but
I think for me,
you're right. You make a really good point there.
Well, like, I have nothing to go on based on, like, that's just my opinion. But also, like, for me, I've dedicated my life to the show for some reason. And also, like, I just have to believe there's, like, some level of integrity to non-eliminations being planned when they're planned, to idols being kind of around and luck-based and effort-based. Like, if I don't believe that, it's something as well for US Survivor. They feel like a lot of people felt certain contestants get handed idols. Like, for me, if I don't believe that, like, everything in my life starts to unravel. Like every single thing. My whole identity becomes pretty hollow.
It's so, the deconstruction of the survivor religion.
Yeah, I can't really go there. So for me, I felt it was just luck, timing, survivor gods to be like, you did it. You did the human thing and like karma rewards you.
Yeah.
So that's how I saw it.
You've convinced me on that one. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of other people in Braids, but of course it is through the lens of George, because everything is, every relationship I have here. Mitch, lens of George, the fact that George was so mad that Mitch went. He was like, he was one of our strongest players. Like, weren't you like dead set on getting him out last week? Was an interesting one for me.
But this is, well, no, it's not to me, because I feel like George really plays so I approached Survivor in a similar way, and maybe this is me just projecting, but I feel like George sees Survivor in the purest sort of sense. Like, nothing's personal, nothing's about he even says it, like, we don't have to get along, we just have to have mutual interests. And I really, like, sure, he gets pretty annoyed in the immediate aftermath of someone going against him, but I think after he's calmed down, he's not writing anyone off. I think that's how he approaches. That's how he thinks Survivor's played. He thinks, oh, people don't care about, you know, the history. You know, the history of not getting along. As long as we can come together now on this move, well, that's all that really matters. Everything up until now doesn't matter. Whereas for a lot of people, these relationships are important, and history is important, and so that's why you get a lot of people playing loyally. But I do understand why he was annoyed that they got rid of Mitch, because I think he really only cares about what's beneficial for days on the board, and I think he really saw Mitch as an asset to getting the tribe further in the game. And that's all that matters at the end of the day. He didn't care that he didn't, he missed the opportunity to get rid of Mitch when he was trying to, but that was a few days ago now. It's a different story on day, whatever day they're up to.
Yeah. I mean, he talks about it from tribe strength. Since that first non-tribal council that he took everyone from, like, he has been going for like Laura and Georgia instead of Joey. Like, that might have become more relevant to him since they started like losing every reward, and since he started being on the bottom and immunities became like completely crucial. So there is possibly some merit there, but like, I feel like his social game, it's kind of interesting, it kind of mirrors the audience. Like, he has someone who loves him so much in Kara that she possibly self-sacrificed for him, and then she has these other people where it's so negative. Like, Wei seems to really personally have an issue with the way he's acting, and like, that seems to be one of the main reasons that she flips, which we'll talk about. And I think the audience as well is like either like here for it, and like, he's again headlining articles, or like getting a little bit fatigued with it. I'm here for it personally. Like, I think it's interesting just the way that the tribe is treating him. Like, I don't want to be judgmental about it, because I think he's driving them nuts. And like, I can't imagine that experience. And often I feel I'm coming onto the podcast and like asking people to be the best version of themselves in tricky situations. But like the parting shot from Mitch, and Joey called him like a stanky rotten egg or something. And I just feel like it's, is this how we treat people in a society? Like, again, I don't want to pass too much judgment because I think he's driven them to rage. But like, in general, do we not call, we don't call each other stanky rotten eggs is what I would.
I completely agree. And I also see, sadly, a, you know, kind of covert bullying going on. Like, George did get upset at Rachel when she called him out in front of the whole group, and basically, you know, pinned a lot of the blame and the tribes dynamics of blame about the tribes dynamics onto George and confronted him. And he said, like, oh, you're ambushing me right now. And she said, no, I'm not ambushing you. And look, sure, she was softly spoken and speaking to him like she would a kindergartner.
She is a teacher.
Not, that's not the way. Yeah. I mean, and she's like, I'm a kindergartner teacher. I know how to deal with these situations. And I was thinking, no, you don't. If someone's causing issues in a tribe, you don't confront them in front of the whole group. You go to them, you speak to them, you have a nice, kind word to them and say, like, hey, yeah, like, hey, look, you know, you're creating a really weird energy in this tribe. It'd be really awesome if you tried to not do that. But instead, it was this covert way of pointing him out in front of the whole group and just saying, yeah, hey, I'm pinning this on you, George, and I'm saying it nicely, but that's not nice. I think most people would hate to be singled out, no matter how nicely you speak when you're being singled out.
I mean, Rachel is actually like an award-winning anti-bullying advocate. And I don't want to say that there's bullying necessarily going on. Like, right. I do think like a lot gets lost in, again, I love George, love him on my TV. I do think a lot gets lost in what 24 hours a day might be like with him. And like, he's in the wrong with a lot of the Rachel stuff. Like, he shouldn't say that on the mat. He did get got in the game. As a fan of the game, again, I don't know what it's like to be out there. I get that it's emotional, but like, as a fan of the game, move on from that. You know, you were trying to get one over on someone else. People got one over on you. That's the game. You know, sulk with it, sure, but like, move on, maybe realize, like, he shouldn't call that out on the mat. He should rise above it. He's in the wrong there. I do agree. When she says she's not attacking him, like, I would also feel attacked where I called out in the group, like, definitely taken away individually. I think, like, maybe we have to give grace for both things, like, is what I'm thinking. Like, it's very harsh towards George, I think. Don't call people stanky rotten eggs in general, but also... Yeah. You know, we're not living out there with George, and he's clearly, like, giving them a huge headache. Not that that makes it okay, but I think that they've lost it a little bit. Like, he's driven them a little crazy. And I think maybe they all wish they acted a little better is possibly true. Yes. Because, again, like, Rachel is a teacher and an anti-bullying advocate. Like, she would never want to be part of that or, like, condoning behavior that does call someone a stanky rotten egg, which I keep coming back to. I think maybe the Brains tribe has lost it a little bit with the George hole that they are all currently in.
Yeah, but I just think, you know, keep it in the game. Just vote him out. We don't need to get personal. Yeah. You know, like, we don't need to.
I guess it gets blurred. It gets blurred when it feels so day to day, and it's a part of your every second that everything is George. Like, even with like the Georgia stuff, like I don't know why he keeps like discrediting whole professions. If we're looking at the Rachel stuff, but Georgia as well. Like, I thought she came off poorly after, you know, 5.5 episodes with no confessional. Then she's like telling us how she, as a forensic psychologist, is going to manipulate George, and George is telling us how she's like absolutely not doing that. And I was like, you guys are underestimating him a little bit because you just can't stand him, and like, possibly it's your own peril at a point. So like, be careful.
Yeah. I was a bit disappointed because right after that, interaction George had with Rachel, and I was like, that's not how you deal with you know, a problem child, that's not how you do. But then Georgia goes off and speaks to him individually, and I'm like, yes, that's how you deal with it.
And I
think George was liking it, and he was like, oh, but thanks, Georgia, that's so nice. And then I keep watching, and then the ulterior motive becomes so painfully clear that she's just following him around, and then she totally undermines her, essentially her move to make him feel like she had his back. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was a bit disappointed. I was like, yes, 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 no, 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 no.
Yeah, like, I think that he's not an idiot. Like, he's on the brains track. No. Like, the way that it's like, he's going to just think I'm being here as a friend. Like, he knows what you're doing. I think, like, it's that underestimating or, like, yeah, talking to him a bit like he is a child who got called into the principal's office. Again, like, we could say a lot of what George is doing wrong socially, and I think we have, and we can call that out, while also being like, maybe you've been forced into this position like the rest of the tribe, but like you're also now not handling it well. It's both things. Yeah. Like you've all been kind of like, it's all just like kind of a not great look for everyone across the board. And we're all just like in this hellscape together. So, you know, that's an issue. But I think in terms of like the last person that I want to talk about and the biggest thing socially for George has been that he lost Wei and she flipped on him and gave them the capacity to split the vote. As we said, even though she could have flipped, they didn't even need to use the idol. Yeah. She was on the right side of the split. Talked about it. What do you think of this choice? She could go to be the seventh of the majority, or she could really try and get something going with or without the idol with this minority. And I think really make something happen. What do you think she should have done?
I can only see things through my own lens, and I would never jump to the bottom of another alliance. I just wouldn't. I would start an entirely new alliance where the power distribution feels even. I would absolutely do that. But to jump to the bottom of a pretty tight-knit alliance, I just don't see that boding well for Wei. Whereas what I do see, alternatively, I can see her instead, you know, sticking with the card she's been dealt for now. Because I think with Wei's support, am I correct? They would have pulled, like the George side would have pulled off what they wanted to.
Yeah, ultimately. I mean, they would have had her information. They would have had her vote. They wouldn't have been able to split. And yeah, had she jumped back, they wouldn't have even needed the idol. And they could have, on the plurality vote, they could have taken out Georgia. But even then, they probably would have played the idol on someone. Like it would have been a pretty safe bet that she could have really led the minority to a victory here.
Totally. And the thing is, she has history with all those people. And as much as sure they might be annoying her at this stage, and maybe she's feeling like, oh, I don't want to work so closely with George or whatever, the history at the very least is going to be more beneficial than jumping to the bottom of an alliance that is already so strong. And I have to say, like, she continues to undersell herself in challenges and say, oh, I'm not very good at challenges. And then she sits herself out on a huge puzzle challenge. So she keeps on undermining her value as well, which is something I continually find quite frustrating about her because she has a lot of value. She's great at puzzles and she's a pretty powerful number, and yet she's just allowing herself to be sort of moved around at the whim of others, and I hate to see that. I hate seeing that for her, and so seeing her do that, I didn't like it. I can see why she did it. It's sure she's moved to a majority, but I just don't see that working out long term. I really don't.
Yeah, it's quite a passive game, I think. You know, it's between a majority pulling her over or her kind of stay. It doesn't feel like it's in necessarily her hands, but I guess her breaking from George, who she seemed to not really want to work with, is her move and is her autonomy. Like, I think for me, you never break from three strong allies to six vague allies who bring you in as a clear seventh just so they can split a vote. But I don't know that these were strong allies. Like, she doesn't seem to really want to be working with George. And I think that there's an emotionality to that. It's an emotional, personal decision because she's struggling to play with him.
Yes.
But also...
Absolutely.
But, like, that personal decision is valid. Like, that's her day-to-day. That's someone she feels she can't work with, and that has meaning.
Yeah, and that's so, so true. Yeah, you're right. It is valid. And she's the one living the experience. So she's got to make the best decision for her. And ultimately, I think whatever she decides is best for her is best for her. But I just, like I say, I can only project what I would do. And I don't see it going well. But maybe that's more because I can actually, I can deal quite easily with people I find annoying. Like, especially in the context of Survivor, it's like they're just
annoying.
You've done
this entire podcast, like, an hour and a half with me, exactly.
No, never. But yeah, like if they're just annoying, oh, that's an easy fix.
Yeah.
I do dislike, and I know this sounds, I contradict myself as I say this, but I contradict myself because I ended up voting for Tara to win, which I now, with a bit of space, I actually think I would have voted for Jerry. But Tara's big, when she was, her big feather in her cap was breaking from Lockie. And she was like, oh, well, my big move was to break from Lockie. So, that's a move. That I'm really powerful for doing that. If Wei's only move is to like, oh, well, my big move is to separate myself from George. Well, it's got to have payoff because it can't just be for the sake of separating from him. Like you could have continued to use him to your benefit, I think, by just keeping him on a little longer. Like he's obviously someone who rubs people the wrong way. Like she could have really, I think, been more influential if she'd have stayed in that alliance. But I think she's lost her agency a little bit by moving to a new alliance as a smaller player. And I just hate seeing it because she's I feel like she's undermining herself in challenges, and maybe that's because the experience itself is quite intimidating, but I didn't like it. But, you know, ultimately, like you said, it's her decision is valid and she needs to do what's best for her. And if giving herself a bit of space from George is the only way she can like feel good about moving forward in the game, well then that like really that's all that matters.
Yeah. I mean, she feels a little pulled. I think that's what it is. It doesn't feel like her move. Like if she had been able to handle it like you did, handle the personalities and win for the minority on a 4-3-3 split and have the minority keep the idol 4-5 next time with taking out like a Georgia, she'd be getting some cheesy points for me. And like, spoiler alert, I'm not giving her any cheesy points. I mean, that would have just been the most baller move. So the fan in me wants to see that happen. And even beyond that, I feel like, you know, she gets to this like big majority. Does it put her up one spot? Like now, is she above like a George and Baden, or what they thought would be a Kara and Baden? You know, if she if she sticks with the minority, maybe they're probably gunning for George next time. So you still have that as a shield. You do have an idol that you could have kept, or you know, whether they realize that or not. You might be like second in line rather than third in line. Like it helps her maybe slightly to a swap, but for me, like not a huge amount to really make this worth it.
Yeah.
I just think it must have just been a social thing that won out over any of this cool strategic stuff where I was like, but you were so close. Like, you really could have led this minority to something really powerful. You really could have, you know, made a pretty powerful contingent here. And other than, you know, getting a couple of slots up maybe to a possible swap or in a hierarchy that you're very clearly on the bottom of, I don't see a ton of gain. Yeah. I just think it's just a personal thing, and I do think that that has merit. So it's not going to get any cheesy points for me. I think that I do understand it more than most. Strategically, I'm not, you know, I would say that cool number thing, do the cool number thing, you know, in terms of like the fan in me, it was kind of the opposite of Kara's move. I'm like, that's a terrible move, but I'm cheering for it for Kara's move. Like, you clearly idled yourself out of the game.
Yeah.
For her, I'm like, I do see some sense, but I'm like also not loving it because it's just really sad that you've broken from George and it's just not, you know, it's just really depressing that you can't work with him and he's so sad about it and I'm sad about it. But like, from like a person-to-person perspective, it's like the only way I understand it. I do think that has a lot of relevance, but that other move would have been so cool. Just imagine how cool.
And the sad thing of like, oh, I know you want to dump me, but can you just dump me tomorrow?
I was like, oh my God,
it's like a bad relationship.
I cannot deal with how sad that made me. Like, so on a personal level.
He's like, I know you don't love me anymore. It's like a marriage that's over before it's over.
Yeah, you're waiting for the kids to move out. Yeah, can you just wait? I know you can't stand to be around
the kids
for
are 18.
Even a second, but like, let them finish high school, please. It was painful.
Oh my God,
it
pain.
Was truly painful. So,
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Well, I do want to get to the Chizzy once we're talking about it. I've now spoiled that Wei will not factor into my Chizzy points, but let's get into it. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
All right, the Chizzy is here. We're giving out 3, 2, and 1 points for the first, second, and third best player of the week. Sarah, do you want me to go first, or do you want to give me your points?
Yeah, you go first. I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
All right. I will give 3 points to Simon. He would just, obviously, we've been speaking a lot about brains, but we're going to go back to Braun. I love that he convinced the majority not to vote for him. Subsequently found 2 idols. They only know about 1, which isn't great. It's small enough against it. I think it was nonsensical to keep him. I continue to think that that's all a credit to him. I think he's going to do some damage, and I think they will regret it. And ton of credit to Simon. Love watching him play. I will give 2 points to Joey for his Koei majority. Again, points off for the things I've talked about. Putting Wei on the George split. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
Can't get over it. We'll never get over it. And also, I didn't hugely agree with the Mitch vote, but, you know, points gained for leading the majority, making inroads on Braun, bringing Wei back in to solve the fact that he had voted out Mitch. Just socially, as we've said, getting it done. It's hard for me to credit anyone else out of Koei because I see so little of it. So I'm giving 2 points to Joey. And we haven't actually spoken about this person very much at all, but I will give a point to Gerald. I like that he saw Simon had the idol. He told Kez and Flick, so he's like really showing like how important he is there. And he didn't actually flip on the Benny vote, which again is something I agree with. And he was actually like, why did we do that? And I'm like, Gerald, yes, I totally agree.
Yeah.
So I'm giving him a point there. I'll give an honorable mention to Haley as a swing vote who was wanted by both sides without kind of the conflict and blowback that Rachel ended up having. But yeah, I'm going to give that 3, 2, and 1. And Kara will get human points from me as well. Not game points, but definitely Jesus points, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a pretty I've got a similar list. My 3 points goes to George, purely for the fact that I think if you get someone to self-sacrifice, no matter how it occurred, it's just you've got, like, that is so unreal. Who gets that, especially when you're as abrasive as you are as George. Like, somehow he has found the one person in the tribe to go idol hunting with him and then find their own idol and then play it for him. Like, he just add to that, he's just constantly being so scrappy. And yes, it's bombastic, and it's you know, it grates people, and that's definitely negative, you know, that's negative points as well. But it's just plus points to get someone to self-sacrifice. I just can't believe it. It was just made my jaw drop. So, I just can't give it to anyone else. I gave 2 points to Simon for all the reasons you said. He's relentless. He has found 2 idols. That is also insanely impressive. Gerald knows about 1, but, like, he's got a lot of power now, and he was in so much trouble before he found these idols, yet I feel quite optimistic for him, at least for week 3, which I really didn't think I would feel that way at the end of week 1. So props to Simon for really getting through this week and ending up in a powerful position. I think he gained a lot of ground this week. I will give the last point to Haley because it's a quiet game. It's like you don't see a lot of it's not making a lot of confessionals, but I can see, like, she's the only one out of the swing votes in brains to it seems like avoid the fallout. She seems to be close with everyone. I just see, in terms of a long-term strategy, hers is really shaping up to be a good long-term strategy, and that's got to be worth a point. I'll say my honourable mention is for Gerald. I, I, I just love it. He's so surprising. I love the quotes he makes. I like that he said, what did he say this week? He said, I love animal products on gluten. I'm like, yes, farmer boy. But then also, he's so stereotypically a farmer, but he's switched on. And he's watching people. He knows his position in his alliance. He's keeping close watch on Simon. I feel like that's going to have payoff eventually. It's going to be totally because of him. So I just like seeing someone who breaks convention, as a strategic thinking farmer. So yeah, honourable mentions to him. But yeah, I'd say our lists are pretty similar, just slightly rearranged.
Yeah, I mean, I was between Haley and Gerald for the one point. It was just when I watched that confessional again where Gerald was complaining about the Benny vote, and I was like, yes, Gerald, I totally agree. So yeah. I was like, we're really on the same page with that. And then he says, like, Simon's going to be looking for idols, and he, like, really lays that out for us and then, like, makes good on that by seeing it. I really like telling Kez and Flick, like, he's making himself even more important in the alliance. So I think some good points there. Like, George is an interesting one because the Chizzy does tend to really reward people for big play. Like, if I, you know, because we don't take away any points. There are no negative points.
Yes.
Like, if I was going to some points this week, I might give, like, one to George because, as you said, like, the self-sacrifice is pretty impressive. He did find an idol.
Yeah.
He did bring in Baden with that, which I really liked. Like, some good stuff there.
Yes,
but then I might, like, minus 5 points. But that's not something that we do in the Chizzy for all the reasons that I've had the issues with the way that he played the idol, for example, and some of the social stuff that George is doing. So it does end up kind of rewarding big play by being like, good job for big play, but also we don't have any way to kind of condemn you in the Chizzy points for negative big play. So the leaderboard is currently Simon winning on 5 with our 5 points that we gave him this week, which makes him win the week on 5 points. Then we have Kez, Dany, and George on 4. Flick is on 3. Joey is on 2. And Gerald and Haley are on 1 each. So it is heating up with the Chizzy leaderboard. Well done to Simon winning the week. Congratulations.
Yeah, well done. Just goes to show you how much work he's done this week to be on top of the leaderboard. I'm so excited to see how all of this plays out in week 3. I just can only imagine it getting more crazy. And I'm so glad I don't have to recap next week because I just think it's going to be even crazier and things are going to change so fast. And yeah, feel sorry for the next bugger.
Yeah, well, I will tease that. I'll say who we're having at the end of the podcast. Until then, I do have JLP tweets for you. We can take the foot off the strategic gas and get to JLP's always inappropriate tweets, which are every week great.
Yeah.
He says, poor Haley getting an eyeful of George's dangleberries. That was from the yoga. Again, he's putting all the names in caps, so it's like weirdly, like it's like, poor Haley getting an eyeful of George's dangleberries.
Yeah, it's really important that you know it was Haley's eyes and George's dangleberries.
Yes. It's also like I felt like George's lack of underwear became like Chekhov's George's lack of underwear and that they described how he didn't have underwear and then later he found the idol and was like, I don't have underwear. And I was like, oh, this is now a storyline.
Yeah.
George's lack of underwear is relevant.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like when you're watching a movie and they like zoom, they do a close up on something and you're like, note this for later.
Yes, exactly. Keep in your mind.
Wear underpants.
Yeah, George's lack of underwear is important here. JLP said, interesting how Braun only perform at challenges when protein is on offer, which is something similar to what he said in his commentary, which I thought was really funny. He also says, a few less reps in the gym and a little more time reading can be useful when it comes to word puzzles. Just saying. The fact that they misspelled Survivor, can we talk about this?
And I hated that it was Shannon putting the blocks in. I was like,
I don't think it's her fault.
It's not her fault. I completely agree. But I was just like, anyone else. I wish it was Emmett.
Yeah. And then like Chelsea's this, like, it's not all of the signs. Oh my God. Like, why would it need to be, you needed to be on the signs to know how to spell it. Is that where we're at?
I know. But I'm trying to like, now I'm being dumb, but was there an O in that puzzle?
Yeah.
You know, because
there wasn't. Will brains or brawn survive until dawn? So yeah, until I guess in the dawn. Order
yeah,
was.
So
will
maybe
brains
there were
dawn,
like, you know,
that should have been an O.
Yeah. Like they'd done survive, and then they were like, oh, maybe survive. I'm trying to justify it here
to give like a lot of benefit of the doubt. I kind of see it. They said survive, and then they were like, no, survivor, and that's not. But. Yeah. And they're hungry, but also the fact that the Brawn tribe did that and they're against the Brains tribe, it did write itself. I mean, it didn't because it was felt.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, I don't know if you're able to live that down.
It was funny. I love it. I really have loved. Well, firstly, just general notes. I like that the immunity challenges are shaping up to be fairly even. I hate seeing a whitewash. And, you know, I really like seeing that Brains are actually coming through, showing that, yeah, we're Brains for a reason. We understand puzzles. Because puzzles are, you know, really, really quite difficult. So it's nice to see that Brains, what they lack in Brawn, like they really do come through most of the time in Brains. So, because at the start of the show, I was thinking, oh, it's so brawny. Like, it's how are these this older, weaker tribe supposed to compete with a young, stronger tribe? But yeah, so it's really nice to see, and it's also a little bit satisfying to see the Brawns not be able to spell. Not satisfying, funny, just funny.
Well, like, I mean, I think now the record's like 9-3 because they lost every reward challenge. The hard thing is like, they will give you a puzzle every so often, which Brains at this point have like an 80% chance-ish of getting. But then every other challenge is like not, you know, it's Brawn. It's physical. It's wrestling or balancing or, I mean, Haley's doing amazing. Haley beat an MMA fighter in wrestling, and then she beat a surfer. Not just a surfer, a surfing champion who's like won world records for her surfing.
Yes.
Like, I know that Haley is apparently a dancer, but she's just like a dancer, right? She's not like a world champion record breaking dancer, and she beat her at balancing. So like, she's doing unbelievably well in the challenges.
I really believe by the end of this, she'll be like one of those memorable challenge beasts. And I love to see it as well. As a smaller framed woman, it's like, yeah, go Haley. Like someone you don't necessarily expect, like going up against these, you know, strong other women, she holds her own and actually dominates. So I love seeing that. God, I love her. That's why I gave her a point this week, because I'm like, she's doing so much, she's just getting little airtime, but she's love it.
That is true. And she assumedly can also spell Survivor, and that's good stuff as well.
Do you know a little inside information? I don't know if this should be on the podcast or not. I think it's fine. But so little known to a few of us Survivor players, before going on to the game, she sort of made this Instagram account called Undercover Fan, and she asked people like, hey, you know, what should I wear out there? And I will say, she didn't ask for any like tips. She didn't cheat, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. It was all very above board, but she reached out to a few members, myself being one of them, just to help herself prepare the clothes wise for the game. So when it was revealed that Haley was Undercover Fan, I instantly was like, yes, Undercover Fan.
Yeah, who else is it, Haley or one of the any other people who have seen the show before? Which it's slim pickings. But I think like reward preparedness for sure, like as we're talking about like passion versus apathy or care versus apathy with like Simon and Benny, if she cares enough to like put in enough effort to make an Instagram account to prepare for this even remotely, like she should win out for that. Like, she should be rewarded for that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think any other fan playing would do the same. In fact, I wouldn't put it, but like, that's just the only one I know of. So I imagine there'd be lots of other reaching out to Survivor alumni. But yes, go Undercover Fan all the way.
All right, there you go. Undercover Fan. Oh my gosh, she's really been playing the game for so long. JLP also says there are some things you just can't unsee, like Gerald's, all caps, booty shot for the woodchopper's calendar. This was a short little scene of Gerald doing the little calendar thing. We get these like camp life scenes in AU. And I was also like, you know what? Also, that contributes to my chizzy point, because that's like fun social stuff. Like, you know, he's people like him.
And
he's
also, like the poses were amazing.
We have an expert here. There you go.
I was like, these are such great ideas. The original, they're all so different and new and exciting. Yeah, I love that as well. I never want to unsee sexy farmer man.
Will you recreate the calendar with those poses?
Oh my God. I don't know if you know about the Lee Castle Irons Tower Challenge. I've already been involved in a naked calendar. I think
I mean, no one said it had to be naked. There was like a pretty big cowboy hat that you could use, I think, to cover much of yourself. But I'm not like soliciting this because that would be really, really weird.
I think Lee Castledine said it had to be naked. So,
Well, Gerald's calendar doesn't have to be. But I think next time when you do the Tao Challenge, which is seeming like an annual thing, you know where to get your inspiration. Yes. Gerald in this
episode. I think Gerald needs to be involved.
Yes, yes. I actually really love that. And he could have a Tao and a hat because I don't think, Gerald could be naked, but not without his hat. That would be a bridge too far. That's a part of his body.
He could have a towel on his head and the hat where
yes, that's towel brilliant. Should be. Okay, that's why, you know, you're in editorial. That's just incredible creative direction. Make it happen, Lee. Make it happen, Gerald.
That's why
they
pay me the big bucks.
Exactly. JLP said, ouch, a lot of O's. I'm not sure Andrew's going to be having kids anytime soon. This was on the balancing. We all saw it, okay? We were all there. Let's just move on from it, maybe.
I know. I've seen too with that and the Olympics. I've seen too many people hurt that their nether regions in that way this week. I don't want to see it anymore. Can we all protect the nether regions, boys?
Man getting hit by a football all the way. That's what it was. And ironically, JLP also tweeted, "Grab your balls and hit the mud pit." Obviously, during the challenge, I don't know that Andrew can anymore. JLP, it's a problem.
Aww.
It's a concern.
Boom, boom, that's a good one. That's a good one. I like that one, JLP.
maybe they shouldn't have voted out the doctor for this reason.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's a tricky thing being a doctor in that show. Because we also, you know, we get monitored by doctors. And
yes, I should hope so.
At least in our season, we obviously had a doctor as well in Tessa, and the doctors were pretty stingy with how they would, I suppose, look after our wounds. And it was almost like a battle of the minds when Tessa was like, no, that's not how you treat that injury. No, you should be getting this. And so in a way, it's nice to have a doctor, but then it's also it creates a funny dynamic.
Yeah, famous scene where Shane on US Survivor showed his groin rash to Saree, who's a nurse, and I, you know, definitely call in the medics for that, but, you know, not her job. Like, she's not getting paid for this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's good.
She went on Survivor to get away from groin rashes.
Exactly. And Mitch is now free of that. So, you know, thank God for that he doesn't have to look at any groin rashes. Probably George's dangleberry. That's been the running theme. He's not wearing underwear, in case you didn't know. Important.
Yeah, do we all remember that?
Yes, it's going to be important to later strategy. JLP said, cheers to all those lactose-dependent souls out there. This, when Gerald said that, it spoke to my heart, because that's me. Like, I'm a vegetarian who doesn't like vegetables. I exist on cheese, on dairy, on chocolate, on milk, on lactose. That is me. That's totally me. I'm lactose-dependent. I've just never had a word for it before now.
Yeah, me too. I'll relate it to my own experience. When I was out there, we all had different cravings. And obviously some people were like, oh, I'd kill for some protein. Oh, I'd kill for some sugar. For me, it was always like I'd kill for some cheese. I'd kill for some milk. Like, I also was drawn to just having dairy. And I don't know why, but I have to say I got to get on board the lactose dependent train.
I definitely am. Thank you, Gerald, for leading that, I guess. A lot of Gerald stuff, and Gerald's obviously a great character. We don't get enough of Gerald.
Love him.
Okay, so JLP also, this is the last one, he quote tweeted a deleted tweet at the time of me pulling these tweets. Clearly the deleted tweet was complaining about the twist to leave Cara in the game, and he said, happens all the time on the US, i.e. Edge of Extinction. And I just love the idea that JLP himself would respond to a fan who is complaining, and that fan would be oh my God, you're JLP, and obviously delete it, because that's terrifying. And I'm just good that it was you and not me, because there's a world in which I'm complaining about this on Twitter. I do complain on Twitter from time to time about Twist, and JLP is coming for me, and I would quit podcasting, and I would quit Survivor, and I would quit life, and I'm just glad it was this guy and not me.
So funny. But again, the structure around that, like I'm with you, Shannon, like structure around that is different. It's not the same. And like when you read that out to me, my face was all scrunched up. I was like, not the same, JLP, not the same. But then again, I wouldn't go up against him in a Twitter war. So this is me arguing with him from a very safe.
Exactly. Safe. If JLP is like 2 hours into this podcast, then he's earned the right to clap back at us.
Oh, God.
I will say, yeah. You know, I wouldn't defend things with Edge of Extinction. Edge of Extinction is like the worst ever twist. That's like saying like,
yeah.
You know, it's not, I can't even think of it because Edge of Extinction would be my example. Like, it's not that bad. It's like Edge of Extinction. I can't think of what is that other terrible thing. It's not that bad. It's like COVID. That's what it's like. That's what it's like saying. It happens all the time. It's like COVID. Yeah. No, COVID's terrible. Edge of Extinction is terrible. It's a terrible thing.
Yeah,
you don't use it to defend
this. Yeah.
You want to be different from that.
Yeah, totally. Like, that's notoriously a not good thing.
Yes. JLP, if you're listening, feel free to respond on Twitter. But don't, please.
But still, notice me, senpai, notice me. All the same.
Exactly. Like, if I was going to respond to JLP, this is what I'd say. I won't because I'm terrified. And I don't think that he has gotten this far into this podcast. So I'm good to go. So those were the JLP tweets. I also have questions from the listeners. We got so many good questions this week. A lot of like, just tell her I love her. I'm like, tell her yourself. God damn. But we got that.
I love that.
People were very excited. They were pumped up.
I feel unworthy.
No, not at all. This has been so fun. And I hope that they are all extremely satisfied with how good this has been. But Zach Sinclair asks, how do you feel about idols being hidden in rewards, especially given that the reward challenges have overwhelmingly favored athleticism? Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I don't think they needed to put another idol in anyway. You have one at each camp. You're good to go. Yes, a lot are being played and re-hidden. That's cool. That's above board. But like, the Bronze have won every reward. Mm. They've all been very, very physical, other than the first puzzle-based reward. And like, yeah, if they're going to put one in a reward, it's probably going to favor Bronze. It does seem a little unfair.
Mm. It does, but like, I like that. I like that question. That's a good point that I hadn't thought of. But I suppose, like, I think, okay, well, the alternative, like, maybe put it under the sit-out seat and someone has the opportunity to get it on the Brains Tribe. Like, Away could have gotten it on the Brains Tribe. But then you think, but then that's just there's too many idols on that tribe as well. I think they probably just need to go a bit easier. I have no problem with it being in the rewards. I like seeing people look for it when it's not there. I think that's so funny. But yeah, it does seem a bit like, oh, okay, all right, you know it's going to be Braun. Good point. I don't really have much to say, but good point. I think they should just go a bit easier with it. It's been very idol heavy. This it's only 2 weeks into the game.
I think we're at 5 idols and an advantage in 6 episodes. Is that what it is? We had Kara, we had George, we had advantage, we have 2 for Simon, we had Kez. Yeah, that's a lot. I just feel like I also enjoy when they put them in the reward. That shows like who's being really aware and who's kind of just like eating and falling to temptation, like clear story. Yeah. I just feel like when someone plays it, so when Kez plays it, if that tribe wins reward the next day, you hide it in that reward. And if they don't win reward, you just hide it at camp. Like, you don't put one at camp and in the reward. You just make it one or the other.
Yeah.
So that's an easy way to have. There shouldn't be that many in the game. There shouldn't be that many on the Braun Beach. It's not fair that it would be, because this is something we said in All Stars as well. It's like, it seemed like they put an advantage at one camp and not at the other. And then, like, it needs to be earned. So, I mean, I guess it is earned because they win the reward. But, like, it's been tough to be the Brains tribe with the rewards, and it's all quite physical.
Well, it's just, it's also interesting, like, the reason we've had so many as well, it's just because they keep coming up and then get used immediately.
Yeah.
And not always.
We've had 3 idols play.
Well.
And an advantage.
Yeah.
So they will be rehidden. So it just makes sense. This was like the one erroneous idol where it was too many. The other ones are like one at each camp, and then they get played and then they could get put back in. Like, that is how the game should naturally go. It is a lot, but that's because they're all getting played. This was like the extra one where it was like, now it's too much.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, good. I had a tweet about that as well, because like my tweets were like, oh my God, I'm really rooting for Simon. So happy he got an idol when he got the first one. And then I was like, then he got the second one, and I was like,
damn it,
too many idols. So basically my feelings were, I like Simon so much. I'm so glad he got an idol 20 minutes later, but not that many idols. Like, there has to be a limit to it. And I'm kind of...
Totally.
Those two poles.
Don't make it too easy for him. Exactly. We like the struggle. We like that part of Simon.
Yeah.
We didn't like him week one when he thought he was on top.
Exactly. He has one and then he's fighting. He has two. He's too powerful. Now I'm not into it. Now he's on underdog. You turned it around real quick. Talking TV on Twitter says, I was so disappointed Sarah was on All Stars. Same. Is Sarah disappointed there was no beauty tribe this season? Does she think the physical landscape changes the game? Yeah, this is an interesting one because obviously they took out beauty, brains versus brawn versus beauty. They made it quite a binary thing. But there is like the your looks get you ahead part of the game usually, and they took that out. Like as a model, as someone who'd probably be on the beauty tribe, how do you feel about that?
No, well, I'm so happy they didn't have it for lots of reasons. I will say this, when I talk about the grooming ahead of the show, when I auditioned knowing that being the token model would be sort of a good call card, that actually liked the show and actually cared about the show and watched it and knew how to play as opposed to just wanting to boost their social profile. But because I was a model, I was often asked in the sort of pre-interviews or...
I'm sure.
Yeah, but I was often asked, like, so are you going to flirt with people to get ahead? And are you going to use your looks? And as
you're
someone
like, what do you
who
think
was,
modeling is? No, like, well, I don't no, flirt on
I'll
my
say
job.
It is. Totally. But it's also that as someone who was really not cool in school, and bullied in school, and someone who never had looks as a part of her identity. Look at me now talking in third person. It's just never been something I have ever leaned on. And I actually really hate seeing people lean on it. I know I'm not saying that it's not a valid manipulation strategy. I just personally have such a distaste for it. I myself would never do it because I firstly don't have any practice doing it. And secondly, I'm so grossed out by that type of like flirting to get your way that I'm really happy it is just brains and brawn. Like it's just, you know, muscle versus head. Like it's that to me is more interesting as opposed to just dumb like, hey, would you mind? Like that's just, yeah, I'm not disappointed. I would have really liked to be on the brains tribe, although as a model, sadly, I would have only gotten on. As a beauty. So, yeah.
No, that's like how they make you talk. I think like when they get these, they haven't just got brains versus brawn. It's all been like careers that are like extreme in that way. And that's why I always have to be like, as a doctor, like even I felt like Mitch was doing that at my exit interview and I wanted to be like, you can stop. Like, it's fine. We don't need you. You know, but they would make you be like, as a model, every time if you were on the beauty tribe. And I think they would push it and it would be not super fun. Like Shannon is clearly a model on the Braun tribe. And I love the way that she was like, my body is my brand and I work so hard on my brand. And
yes,
like, I think she also is like a kickboxing instructor or she's in physical fitness
yes,
as well.
She
but
is,
like
yeah.
also
yeah.
that totally works. And that makes sense beyond it just being like, I use my looks. Like she's not going to flirt. She is married. She's married. Like that's not going to be her. And they've not reduced her to that thing. And they've let her have another really important element of her, work as like a businesswoman, basically in her brand and her body and her modeling. And that's really important.
Yes.
So I do agree that if they were going to take anything out, the using your looks to get ahead thing can be the laziest and it can be just like not super fun from a storytelling perspective. So yeah, I don't miss it.
And I also think so few people in the world can relate to that behavior as well. Like how many people do you really know that does that? I don't know anyone.
It's true. If you were to poll like 100 people that was like, what do you use to get ahead, like between brains and brawn, like I feel like everyone can pretty much attach to one of those binaries, right? Like I mean I don't know that I definitely don't use brawn to get ahead, but I feel like I could be like, yeah, like I try to be smart. So but like how many people in the world really are going to attach to beauty? Like it's very much a specific third thing that is not part of this duality.
Yeah, it's not super relatable.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of people grow up as athletes or like sports or whatever, and a lot of people like puzzles and, you know, being intellectually stimulated. So, don't miss it, ironically.
Yeah, I would agree. Last question. Phil Ferguson, who is the Phil from the season, says, who does Sarah think is playing the most like her?
I said it before, and I would say, like, at this stage, probably Haley.
I can see it, yeah.
Or what's his name? Big D. But I don't personally relate to Big D, so I wouldn't say Big D. But, yeah, Haley. I do think Haley is much more physically superior. But what I see with Haley and Rachel is what I had in the early stages with Mish. So Mish was a player whose motivation was really to essentially win, to get really far into the game. She didn't need to be a flashy player. She didn't need to be someone who had a hand at least in the game, at least in the early stages of the game. So she was really good for me to pair up with because I could just say, hey, Mish, we're doing this. And she would happily go along with it as long as it didn't involve getting rid of her. And because she gave strength to my vote, I was obviously not prepared to, we weren't prepared to give up each other. It was like a voting block in that sense. And I see that with Haley and Rachel. The difference, though, is that Haley is like really towing the line. She's sort of doing she's kind of doing what Mish was doing in that she seemed to be letting Rachel do all the talking and possibly wear all the fallout. But she isn't, I don't think it doesn't seem that she's being as passive as Michelle either, because she's quite social and she, you know, she's got good rapport with, it seems like, everyone on the tribe. So I do think Haley, at this stage in the game, it feels like she's primed to do better than me. Just because I played a bit too far in front. Well, yeah, but I think she's done what I wish I had have done and not been so obviously in the middle as a floating player. So yeah, I would say that, but yeah, I also want to give, I'm uncomfortable with being like, oh yeah, that player is just like me. I really want to give props to Haley for playing her own game and well, I think. But yes,
yeah.
Short answer, Haley.
I mean, it's like, it's similar to you in that middle game thing. I mean, that only caught up with you at the final eight. That's in a long, long, long time to see like how she's going to play it, because I think it is quite an active choice from her. It's not like the same game, but it is that one quite specific defining move, which I think is how you wanted to play.
At this stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say, I say it every time I'm on a podcast, but when I got voted off, I told like Lockie, Luke, Ziggy, and someone else.
It was you. You were the fourth in the alliance.
I was the fourth. I said, if we don't get together right now, you're all strong and you're all big players and you'll all go after me. And they didn't stick with me. Fair enough. They didn't trust me. That's my own fault. But I was still right. They all went woof, 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 right after me. So,
well,
just reminding everyone of that.
But then Lockie ended up being the Bachelor. Luke went and played again.
That's true.
Did pretty well. Like, you know,
Luke won half a million.
Out. Yeah, exactly. You're on this podcast. It worked out for everyone. Everyone got the same thing out of that. Ziggy seems to be doing well, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, Ziggy's doing great.
That's great.
Ziggy, you know what? I'll say Ziggy's super well-adjusted and has a beautiful life and beautiful new baby. So that's also coming out mentally unscarred is also a huge win.
Yeah.
So Ziggy's on top.
Wins all around for that whole alliance. but yeah, no, we'll see. We'll see. Because I think, yeah, you definitely rose up to be like a huge threat and couldn't really hide in it anymore. And then it did crumble. So we'll see if Haley can keep hiding behind the strategy. But Sarah, those are all the questions I have. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Like, this was such a blast. I've wanted you on the podcast for so long and it absolutely delivered.
Thank you, Shannon. I have to say, I really felt like I had to keep up with you. Your brain is amazing. I love that you're the voice of the fans, because I think there's not an option you don't consider. And so when you come down on a decision either way, I think you've really looked at every option, which is, and you also talk about every option, which is really nice as a fan. When you're a fan and you're like, what about this? Well, what about this? Well, you consider it. And it's as a fan, it's really nice to hear you speak out what we're all thinking. So thank you.
I look, I hope that's true. If I didn't talk about some strategy or some move that one of the players, you know, yeah, that at this point, that is on you or the editors, because I'm trying my best here to get to every possible corner of this week of Survivor. And
I think you've done well.
We get close,
considering the week.
I do. Yeah. Sarah, where can people find you on social media and keep up with what you're doing? For the Gerald calendar that I hope is upcoming, or at least whatever part you have to play in art directing that.
Look, I am on just really Instagram. I'm not on Twitter. I lurk on Twitter, but don't bother following me there. Instagram is just Sarah, last name Tallique, Tillelleke. But that's pretty much it. I'm admittedly a little bit quiet on the socials. I only give a few small peeks every now and then. So I don't know. Follow me if you want, but I'm not a Kim Kardashian type where it's nudes every 5 seconds.
Yeah. Only when it's for the calendar, right? Only when it's for even that.
Yes,
that's
only,
for a good cause.
Only for a good cause.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. I'm the same. No. You can follow me at Shannon Gates. There will never be any nudity ever. So not even for a good cause. Not even for the best cause. Not even to cure world hunger. That's the choice I would make.
Oh, come on. We can convince a community.
No, don't even
barrage her.
No. I'm here for the Gerald stuff, but I'm not personally doing that, but you can follow me at Shannon Gates. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed, where you can get all of this content. I'm also covering Survivor South Africa, which is in full swing. It's on template. It's super fun. We had a Merge episode last week that was one of the best episodes of Survivor I've ever watched, and I covered that with Mike Bloom, as always, and Graham Jenica from Survivor South Africa. And next week, I'll be with Mike and my brother Jason, who I'm bringing onto the podcast again. Super
Amazing.
Fun times ahead. But yeah, that's all that I have. Thank you so much again, Sarah. This has been a blast. Way too much nudity talk at the end. I don't know how it always gets here. I don't know why I always get to this place. Like, I don't, for something weird and
I was really propositioning.
Rob. Yeah.
Yeah, I was really propositioning you at the end. Apologies. I think that was my revenge for you propositioning me.
Oh, I don't, because with Rob, I was talking about, like, are we wearing clothes? And we, like, confirmed that we are. Like, I don't know why it keeps going to this place. Gonna need to step
Must
away.
Be you. You're the common denominator.
Clearly.
Common denominator.
Thank you so much for being here, and thank you guys for listening. I'm going to throw it to my exit interview with Mitch, and hope you enjoy.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi, Mitch. Thank you for coming on to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
Yeah, I mean, big night last night, obviously. Sorry to see you go. And it was a big turn of events, because the way we saw it and the way that it started out, you were in a bit of a leadership position. Is that how you saw it as well?
I specifically knew going into the game, like, people ask you questions like, oh, you know, what's your weaknesses, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember going, look, there's two things that are going to always kill my game: getting stuck in some sort of leadership position and getting stuck on principle. So, and then within like 24 hours, I'm doing both of those things. So mm-hmm. I knew I was in trouble. The whole leadership thing is, I knew that, like, it's natural for me to just want to get a task done. So if there is a task sitting in front of me, I cannot not start getting it done. So, like, when it came to the challenges, particularly, I couldn't look at the group being a little bit chaotic and not want to take charge, because no one else did. And, like, it's just ingrained into me. It's partly from being a doctor, but it's also from just my natural persona. I don't consider myself a leader. I don't want or seek leadership, but if there's something to be done, I have to start doing it. And that's always how I've been. The group, across the experience, I asked multiple times, because I kept getting put into this position of running the challenges, and I kept asking, like, will anyone else do this? Please, I don't want to do this. Please, please, please. And they're like, no, you're great. You know, you're calm and you're directing the challenges and people hear you, rah, rah. I'm like, okay, look, that's really nice. But does anyone else want to do this? I don't want to do this. And they just basically kept me in that position. And I knew that, like, I was actually, my game was blowing up every time that happened. But I said, the only thing I could do is say, like, as long as everyone is unanimously happy for me to do it, I will do it. And even though George probably rolled his eyes when that was asked, everyone else was like, yeah, no, you definitely lead, rah, rah. But I always knew that was, what's the right description for it? It's a poison chalice. Like, you know, who gets pushed into that role is ultimately going to put their head above and have their head chopped off. So
yeah, people are very ungrateful in this game. They will use the leadership to their advantage and then they'll vote you out for it. And you mentioned George earlier on. What went so wrong here for you? How did this get so negative from what we saw pretty early on?
Well, look, it's very interesting to watch back. Again, the way that the show comes across and what happened in camp was different. So for the first 2 days, I got along with everyone, including George, and I thought George was charming. He was funny, you know, like maybe a little bit quaint, but like, you know, we all are, and I thought it was actually quite lovely. And everyone got along pretty well with him, and it was only after that first tribal when he, you know, essentially flipped a switch and became this other, you know, grandstanding, I'm going to use the word maniac, but that's probably a bit unnecessary. And he, you know, he said all these things that were really incongruent with the message he was trying to put across. So he talked about how everyone was fake and everyone was attacking the weak. But, I mean, George was the one that launched the vote against Wei, and that didn't come across in the episode, but ask any of the contestants. He initiated that vote, and he did it in a really weird way. Like, it made no sense. He basically, he said, everyone vote for Wei, I'm going to vote for Phil, and Phil will vote for me. And that way, if Wei has an idol, you know, it'll be either Phil or I or the other person going home. It was really strange. It made no sense. And it actually, it was one of the first things that got me a bit, it got me a bit concerned that there might be more to the story. And I was actually really suspicious that they were potentially going to go for me. And I heard my name get thrown out before that tribal council. So I had a feeling he didn't like me. And then obviously the council went down and I felt like, wow, here's this guy who says he hates everyone for being phony and attacking the weak. And yet he's done both of those things. And so at that point, I basically decided that I didn't like him as a person because of that dishonesty. And I just personally believe that you're allowed to dislike someone, but you should treat them respectfully. I can say hand on heart that I treated him respectfully in the camp. Obviously, there was that passing shot that I gave as I left in tribal council, but I said my genuine feeling, and that is I didn't enjoy his company. And again, I think you're allowed to not enjoy people's company. Unfortunately, I was forced as part of the show to be in his company for an extended period of time. I respect George as a player. He played his game fantastically. I don't agree with his game, but he did play it fantastically. No one's created chaos better than George has.
Well, do you think that, so when you say he put the vote on Wei, do you think he was doing that because he knew she'd be leaving, or he like authentically was putting the vote on her before he had the advantage?
My like medical science background means that I always treat uncertainty as uncertainty. So I knew there was something fishy going on, but I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. When someone walks in your room and they've, presenting with some vague symptom, you entertain all possibilities until you know conclusively what's happened. And so when he was sort of throwing out all this weird vote chat and he was pushing the weak vote, but then my name's getting thrown out, I was suspicious that there was plans I wasn't privy to. And obviously once I watched the episode, I saw that, okay, so he and Wei had plans to essentially take me out, but they didn't get the votes together. So they ultimately went with his advantage and removed themselves, hoping that I would get kicked by the remaining tribe members. I do believe that he didn't necessarily want Phil to go. I think he probably wanted me to go, and he was happy for Phil to go as a second option, I guess.
Is that why the votes did come out on Phil on that first tribal council, because their name had floated around, or was there something else in the works?
No, that was the most tragic thing of the entire Survivor experience. Phil was lovely. He was so nice, and he was lovely company in camp. And he was great in, you know, the few challenges he got to do. Like, I thought he was a really good asset. I was really keen to, like, you know, have Phil as part of an alliance that I was in moving forward. So when we voted him, we all looked around. We all felt we were on the chopping block. We didn't have an opportunity to discuss this. No one had a plan ready for that scenario. And so when we all looked around, we all just unconsciously went with the vote we thought the others would go with. Like there was no chance for discussion. So we did the lamest thing anyone could do. And that is we just went for, okay, who's the weakest here? And we picked him, which is really unfair. Cause like, again, I don't think Phil is weak at all. It was just this like really sort of basic and superficial thought process that, where we were all just scrambling to protect ourselves. I thought I was heavily on the chopping block. Hayley thought she was on the chopping block. The other guys felt they were on the chopping block. And so I just didn't want to come down to a split vote and find myself with a name thrown out. So we threw out Phil's name, and I've since I've since apologized to Phil. He's understanding. Unfortunately, because I get blindsided, I told him, like, you know, at least there's some comeuppance for me for voting Phil. But, like, there was no good option. Like, of the people that George left behind, there was no good option for who to get rid of. And, I mean, that's what I mean about George, though. You know, he played an amazing game of chaos. He left... You know, his perception of the strongest, I don't necessarily agree with that, but he left his perception of the strongest behind, who would be forced to pick off a strength.
Yeah, I mean, I want to kind of get away from George and just find out some more of these other brain dynamics, because I think a bit of that's gone missing. Who did you think were your closest friends and main relationships on the tribe?
Yeah, so this is brutal for me. But so my main friends and relationships in the tribe, I felt, were three people, Kara, Haley, and Rachel. So two of those people betrayed me, and that's the reason why the blind side was so unforeseen by me. I had tight alliances, particularly with Kara and Haley. Kara was loyal to me, and I loved Kara. She was a wonderful human being. And Haley, I got along with naturally. We were both similar minded in a lot of things, and I sort of naturally felt we had similar thought processes. And so I must say, it really messed with my personal sense of trust when she backstabbed me. I've of course forgiven that because it's a game. It's a game. Like, I've not come away from this with any negative emotions to anyone, and, you know, and including George, obviously. Like, as I said, I respect George. You know, like, it was still in the artificial environment of Survivor. I was like, whoa, that was very surprising to me. Rachel, who also, you know, more or less betrayed me, she was very good at sort of putting the knife in me. And it looked like that might have been planned well in advance. She came across so friendly to me in the game. I was really surprised.
Well, you know, Joey is the one that we see really put your name out and push that. Like, what was your relationship like with him?
Joey and I got along. Like, we got along. Okay, my perception. I have to preface this. My perception was that Joey and I got along really well. I really liked Joey. He was a charming guy, and he was a wonderful player, and he was a wonderful physical asset. Like, from the game point of view, he was fantastic to have. The fact that he launches a vote against me, like, I guess I can feel flattered that he, you know, said it was because I was a threat and he thought he wanted to take me out early. So I guess I should feel flattered by that. I was still a bit, you know, like, oh, that sucked and it hurt. But I mean, what would have happened in three more rounds? I probably would have tried to put the knife in him. So I respect him for doing that. But, you know, Joey in that episode also he made himself to sound like he was the ringleader. I don't think that at all. I think that's, again, it's the same trap I kind of fell into with the whole leadership thing. Never feel like you're on top of an alliance. As soon as you put your head above, people chop it off. So I think realistically, Georgia and Laura, one of those two I'm yet to see, is controlling that alliance truly. I think given Georgia's background with the psychology, she may or may not have a better grasp of covert manipulation. And I think we might see that in coming episodes. And so I think she's probably most likely in control of that four. And she's probably playing Joey as a bit of a puppet.
Okay. Well, we haven't seen anything really of Georgia so far in the broadcast. So hopefully we see a little bit more of her. And then you go and you vote for George in the episode where you go home. Like, what did you think was happening there? Yep. You know, he has an idol. Like, what was in your mind the plan?
I loved how the votes fell. I was so excited for that because, again, I went out and, look, I think that there wasn't a lot I could do to stop myself going out. If I could go back in time, I probably would have done the same thing anyway. That vote for me was about integrity because I went into both tribal councils looking for unity. And in my mind, the only way to get unity in that vote was to do a split vote George Way so that the rest of us could move forward together. And so when I was the only person who voted for George, that might be seen as, oh, geez, he just hates George and he wants to get rid of George. I'm like, well, George is just trying to blow up and divide the tribe. He's the one who's making everyone cranky and upset. He's the one who's saying, you know, mean things and everyone's talking behind his back. Why would anyone want to continue with this? I found it, like, again, it was a bit, I felt a bit of you know, a bit of pity for George, because like people were saying mean things behind his back, and I didn't like that. So I saw the vote from me as a way of being honest, and whereas everyone else was dishonest, and they ultimately just fell into his trap of playing division, as opposed to playing for unity. When I think, you know, that early in the game, it was the second vote out. I think unity's still got to be the goal.
Mm. Did you see the dynamics that we were painted with, like that hierarchy? I know you think Joey's not necessarily at the top, but did you see that four and the middle group that we were shown with, like you and Rachel and Haley, and then the people you saw that hierarchy as well, as clearly as it's shown on the show?
Oh, it was clear from day one, day two. So it wasn't, again, like the way that it's been shown on TV, it's not as obvious, but that hierarchy has existed from day one, day two. The alliance of Joey, Andrew, Laura and Georgia existed as far back as day one, day two. Even if they don't think that, everyone else saw it that way, and that created a lot of concern in the other half of the tribe. So much so that Wei is actually the person who launches the Laura vote, and that's supported by Kara and a few others, including Rachel. Ironically, I never supported the Laura vote, so even though I fall prey to this split tribe dynamic, I was never an advocate for it. In fact, when I got voted out, I felt a little bit hard done by, because I'm like, oh, Laura, I mean, I don't know if you felt like you were being targeted by me, but it was everybody else in the tribe who was targeting you. I was one of the few people who didn't actually try to launch that vote on you.
Yeah. Very unfair, I would say. You know, they take out, obviously, someone who's voting with them. It's a difficult one. My last question is, coming into the show, did you have much experience with Survivor? Had you seen a lot of the show beforehand?
I'm a scientist, so I always do my research. I didn't, as a sort of student and young doctor, I didn't always have time to watch Survivor. So I'd caught bits and pieces of the American show. And when I applied, I'd watched maybe, you know, a season and a half of Australian Survivor. Once I had applied, though, I did my research. So I've watched all of the Australian show, obviously, probably once or twice. And I've watched a few American seasons as well. So that was very much just doing due diligence. Mm-hmm. So I could understand the strategy. Look, really hilariously, there were times where, because there's a few people on the show who have never watched Survivor. See if you can pick them. I won't name them.
That's a fun game.
There were times, this is how much of an idiot I was in terms of my honesty. There were times where I was explaining the intricacy of strategy as it related to idol plays to people who didn't know how they worked.
Wow. That's
concerning. I know. It's like, it's a weird conversation to have, because you're like, I'm like telling them, oh, and you do this and this and this, and this is what you do. Blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, why am I telling them this? These are my enemies, ultimately. But there were people who had no concept of the rules, even though, you know, we all read the rules before we went in. There were people who had never seen the show to understand how the show worked. Again, I'm not going to name names. You can try and pick them.
All right. Well, yeah, I will get on that, trying to decipher this game of who had never seen the show and didn't know the rules. Something fun to look forward to. But Mitch, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Sorry again to see you go, but it was great to watch you.
Nah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. There you have it, everyone. Such a fun recap with Sarah, and some great insights from Mitch as well. So hope you enjoyed all of that. I also realized I forgot to tell you who will be my guest next week. It'll be the amazing Harry Hills, Australian Survivor All-Star, will be recapping week 3 with me, so that should be extremely fun. I still don't know what's happening with exit interviews, unfortunately. Basically, I'm just giving you everything I can at this point, everything that I'm able to get. Just subscribe, follow along, make sure that you're, just tuned into everything, and then you'll know that you won't miss a second of any extra content that we can give you in all the weekly recaps of Australian Survivor and Survivor South Africa. So make sure you subscribe to the International Survivor HAPS feed and follow along for all of that. Until then, we are so appreciative. I am so appreciative, as always, for your support, for listening, for engaging with the podcast in any way. Thank you so much for anyone who is here at the end listening to this podcast. Hope you enjoyed it all, and I will see you next week. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Vince Middle.
Give them the swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Schkelling. 1 million. Rumi.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.